feel painful. When you feel blood, I feel fun. We're together forever. I think that we don't need a heaven. Not one soul gone this mind.
What's up, people? Welcome to a very special episode of the Eastern Lariat. I'm your host, Dylan Fox, and joining me for a very unique edition. We did it last year. We had to bring him back on again. I've been on his show in the meantime, and he comes back on for me. I'm very thankful to have him on. Of course, I'm talking about the co-host of the Emerald Flow show, who just celebrated its 50th episode, which he was not on, but it celebrated it anyway. Of course, I'm talking about my friend, Gerard DiTrollio. Welcome on the Eastern Lariat.
Oh, hey, Dylan. It's great to be back, and I'm really excited to talk about the Hall of Fame.
It's worth mentioning, too, that I didn't just grab you randomly. Not that I wouldn't have if you weren't, because I value your opinion on things. But it's worth mentioning that you are, in fact, a voter to this Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame.
I am a voter, and this is my second year voting, actually. So it was another great experience. It's something I've actually wanted to do for ages.
Yeah. You know, you were on last year, and I was really happy to have you. Case came on for his take on the show as well. It was a lot of fun having you guys on here. Yeah, you being a voter, do you feel like it was any different the second go around? Did you feel like you put in any more research than you did last year, or were you kind of comfortable with yourself and just kind of blew through it?
Well, I did a little more research in the sort of I follow wrestling in Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Pacific Islands, and Africa section this year to get a good, and I feel comfortable my vote's there. The only region that I didn't vote for is in Mexico yet, and I'm slowly trying to learn more and more about the history of lucha, but I don't feel comfortable ready to vote in there yet, even though I think I have a couple of choices that I would vote for if I did.
Okay, so you are abstaining from Mexico this year.
I am abstaining from Mexico this year, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll give a brief breakdown on that here. Last year, me and you really focused on the non-wrestler of the Japan. Obviously, the Eastern Lariat is a Japanese wrestling show. Everybody knows it there. But we also talk about other wrestling, too. I've definitely done it a lot on the Patreon in the past. I've kind of branched off a little bit with Wrestle Update, talking more of the American stuff, and obviously Lucha Talk with the Lucha. But one other thing worth mentioning, too, before we get into the candidates themselves. This was a year of big changes in terms of how the ballot is actually formatted. In the past, it was kind of like Dave would say, shout out to Dave Meltzer, the mastermind behind all of this, as well as John Williams back in the original 96 version. But basically, it was, correct me if I'm wrong, you could vote for 10 people of any category. And if you didn't vote for, you know, if you voted for somebody in your category, that was a no vote to anybody you didn't vote for in that category. But this year, it's been broken down. So, for example, basically the way that it's listed is it's based around how many people are in a certain category. So, for example, the historical performers era has a ton of people in it. So you could vote for 8 people in it. That's your maximum. For the U.S., there's a medium amount of people, so you vote for 5. For Japan and Mexico as well, it's a little bit smaller, so you have 3 maximum votes. So you can't just vote for everybody in a single category this year. Did that affect your voting any?
Not really, because it probably affected my voting in terms of I didn't vote for everyone that I may have in Japan, actually, yeah. But that's about it.
I think it's interesting. What's your take on this change? Do you think it was better last year or how it is before? Because like you said, now you can't just go in Japan. Because if you really look at it, and this is true of Mexico as well, pretty much every person has like at least a case. There's one or two that I wouldn't vote for, to be honest. But other than those two, you know, you're looking at 5, 6, 7, 8 deep in Japan that are very reasonable votes. But now they limit you. Do you think it's better this year or last year?
Well, I mean, I guess this is going to be debatable, but I think that in certain regions, it will cut some of the fat, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Like, there's people that are on here that are never going to get in for various reasons. Maybe because their personal lives, or like I often bring this up, like Ole Anderson is never going to get in, whether or not I don't think he quite counts as a Hall of Famer, but so many ex former and current wrestlers hate Ole Anderson's guts. He's never going to get the votes to get in.
Yeah, and he was a complete jerk as well, by all accounts.
Yeah.
So everybody always points to that. Like you said. And then there's some people that it's going to be really tough to get in, and we'll talk about it as we get through the categories, just because they're from a past era so far back that there really is no footage of them right. or anything like that. And I do think a lot of times with these awards, especially, because at this point, there's a ton of voters going in for this. It's not like, you know, there's a committee of 20 people in, but there's a lot of people that are voting for these. Relatively speaking, it's not like there's thousands or millions.
Well, yeah, and I think what people probably should realize is that, like, it's the wrestlers, both retired and current,
yeah.
that really have a ton of power in this, more so than the historians and journalists.
Oh, yeah, and I had heard a stat on one of the reviews that they had on Voices of Wrestling. I was listening to them talk about it. They go through each region, and one of the stats was that, like, the current wrestlers totally flipped. I think it was like the Hart Foundation and the Historical Performers and somebody else, another tag team. But basically,
Bulldogs, I think.
Yeah, the Bulldogs. Like, the Bulldogs category was way up, but actually every category they were listed in was the same except for modern wrestlers, and it was a huge difference.
Yeah.
That shows you how a lot of the modern wrestlers are really the guys dominating it, which, again, I don't want to take shots at anybody, but I think that's kind of tough. You know, you're really drawing in on your own personal experiences when you're in it's kind of like how, you know, I don't know how familiar you are with American football, especially the college game. But so in college football, a big deal about it is the polls, right? Every week they have a top 25 system. And they separated ones with the media and ones with the coaches. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the coaches' poll isn't that great because they don't have time to be watching all of these other teams and to know the ins and outs or be astute about them. So where somebody who could be an extremely talented wrestler and even very knowledgeable at their craft might not be the best person when it comes to knowing eras and different people and following everyone. And it's very hard, too. You know, that's another thing that's kind of difficult in this is that you're looking at a vast category in all the categories, really. I mean, you know, it's really hard to compare the Beauty Pair and Shingo Takagi. You know, like that's two totally different eras. And I mean, we'll get into them. Not that they both don't have cases, but it's just vastly different overall. Other notes here, if you're not familiar with the rules completely, basically, anyone who gets 60% of the ballots, a yes vote, they go into the Hall of Fame for their regions. They get broken down with each region, historical, modern U.S., Japan, Mexico, and then the other region, which has like Europe and Australia and Africa all listed, and then non-wrestlers. So that's what they're graded against. It's not a smorgasbord where everybody's in. If you get under 10% of the vote, then you're off the ballot. You're not available for next year. And they added the 15-5 rule a few years ago now. It's been around for a little while. But basically, if you're around for 15 years or 1550, excuse me, and you get less than 50% of the votes, then you also are gone. And four candidates need 50% to survive into the next year on this ballot. The first three are all from the other region, the Europe and blah, blah, blah region. Big Daddy, Kendo Nagasaki, Jackie Paolo, and then the fourth is Sergeant Slaughter, who is in the historical region. So that's four people you got to keep your eyes on. And one more thing about your particular voting style and patterns before we get into the actual candidates. Did that factor into any of your votes when you sent them in? Were you thinking, oh, this guy's – he's on the cut line, so I'm going to prioritize voting for him over some other people?
No, I mean, there's some people that I vote for that are on the cut line. I think like Slaughter and JYD, But yeah. I would vote for them anyway, regardless yeah. of like them being on the cut line.
Yeah, good picks. right up to start there. I can already tell you're doing a good job. And the way they separate it is whether they categorize it as in-ring quality, your abilities as a performer, drawing power, and historical significance and influence. Those are three different factors. And basically, if you're a Hall of Famer in two of the three categories, then that's a yes vote. And if you're so overwhelmingly strong in a certain area of one of the three, that's also a good yes vote, is how it's been categorized in the past. And we will see how you voted. Last year, we did a show going over a bunch of these candidates, so we won't go too crazy on the micro section of it all. The first ones we're going to talk about are the new ballots, and I think for the Eastern Lariat, it's only right that we start in the Japan region. And as I said at the start, this is a 3-vote maximum. You have to vote for no more than 3. Surely you should vote for at least 3, because there's more than 3 Hall of Famers, in my opinion. But we will see. That's your choice to make. I don't want to tell you how to vote. I mean, you've already voted, so it's okay.
Yeah. Ballots were due on the 8th.
We were going to do this show earlier, but a bunch of stuff got in the way, to be honest. But it's not going to do anything, I don't think. Any kind of campaigning I can do will have no effect at this point.
I'll tell you some names that I asked Dave to put on the ballot next year, and maybe we can start the campaigning now.
Oh, that's a good idea. Let's save that for the end. Yeah. We look forward. So the Japan region has one new nomination for this year that we could have voted upon, and that is the beauty pair, Jackie Sato and Maki Ueda, which was listed as Maki Fumiaki at first, but never mind that. It was Sato and Ueda. And what was your take on them? Did you vote for them? Do you have any thoughts of them as candidates?
Oh, I absolutely voted for them. Slam dunk, I think, really, if you think about it, the strongest candidates on this list in terms of just their historical significance to creating the sort of pop idol act in Joshi. And actually, what I didn't know is that as a condition of All Japan Women getting on Fuji TV, the television station wanted the wrestlers to do pop performances as part of the show, which I wasn't aware that was like a requirement of them getting on TV. So I thought that was interesting. And like, I mean, yes, they were around for only, what, I think 3 years, 76 to 79, but were huge, had a movie, had best-selling albums, and even their matches against each other did very well at Budokan. And I think that they should be recognized as a tag team, because Jackie Sato is already in there, but she has other historical significance. A, like her feud against Jaguar Yokota in the early 1980s was a big deal, and she broke the 25 or 26 requirement rule when she got in when JWP started. So, I mean, she's significant on her own for other reasons, but I think that this particular, like the beauty pair and what they sort of inaugurated, needs to be recognized.
Yeah. So originally, like Zinjo, their rule was you had to retire at 26 years old. And that did happen at first in the early 80s. It was like 81. And then 5 years later, basically because the Crush Gals got so popular, she wanted back in. And so she and Rumi Kazuma and this other guy, they started JWP. Like, Sato was the original person in charge of that, pretty much. And she her unretirement came at JWP's first ever show against Shinobu Kandori, who I think should be Hall of Famer as well. But regardless of that... and then they shot on each other in a match as well. But that's a story for a different time. The fact of the matter is, everything you said is absolutely true. The beauty pair are Hall of Famers. That's all there is to it. You cannot tell the story of modern Joshi or any time period of Joshi after they came in without speaking of the beauty pair. And Sato was definitely a slam dunk candidate. I'm really surprised that they didn't just put them both in as a tag team anyway, Sato, like you said, did last longer. Ueda, once she was done, she was pretty much done. But still, they both deserve their flowers. You couldn't have had one without the other. They, to me, if I did have a vote, they would absolutely be my top pick of the region, pretty much. I don't think there's any argument, other than they were around very short. But the fact of the matter is, they made such an impact in that shorter period of time that they have to go in. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Absolutely good pick on your part. So they were one of your three picks here.
Well, yeah, and I think also the crossover into pop culture, I think that's something that should be considered, absolutely. And I'll get into that when I talk about some of the other people I voted for.
Absolutely. Like, a huge part. They were superstars. Like, they transcended even the wrestling bubble at the time and even historically. You couldn't have had the Crush Gals without them, and you couldn't have had even something like Toyota and Yamada like without them. It all kind of traces back to them, as well as Mark Fumiyake, who was like their predecessor as well, who really started it because she was like on a contest, like a singing contest, that became a wrestler. That's where that pop stuff kind of came from, was from her. And the beauty pair kind of perfected like her role, more or less. I guess the Crush Gals like took it even to another level in their own way. But regardless, they're already in. So they were the new vote. Everybody else was on the ballot last year. We could start off with Inoki and Sakaguchi as a team. To me, it's a really short case. Inoki is an absolute legend and a Hall of Famer. Everybody knows that. But them as a team, I just don't know why you would put them in. But what do you think?
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think more people need to probably dive into Sakaguchi as a singles.
Yeah, I agree.
He is like a huge name and everything like that. But I always wonder, like, how come he wasn't an even bigger star than he was? And if that was Inoki
holding him back. Well, he was kind of like Inoki's right hand man, even in the backstage area. He was like a big part of the early formations. On the show I did with Cameron, Kenstalker, we're talking about Inoki. We kind of get into that and how important Sakaguchi was, not just as a tag partner, but also in New Japan as a company as well.
Well, that's another reason why, yeah, as a singles.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't think of them as a legendary team. I think of Inoki as a legend, and Sakaguchi is a great performer in his own right. And like you said, maybe with more digging, we may get him over the hump on that end. But as a team, I don't see it there. And kind of a similar story with Kojima and Tenzan. I think they're stronger as singles talents than a tag team.
Absolutely. And I will just add, though, for Inoki and Sakaguchi, I researched them last year, and they did main event some big shows as a tag team. So it's not completely, you know.
And they were, they were definitely a team. I just we're talking about Hall of Fame level. I don't see it, but they did. I mean, anything with Inoki back then was like the Midas touch, pretty much on there. But Sakaguchi deserves his roses as well. But yeah, what about Tenkozy?
No.
Yeah.
There's not much there.
I don't know
if, I mean, their drawing case. I mean, sort of, but they never like were like relied upon to draw really, really big on really big shows. They did main event at Wrestle Kingdom, though.
How about that?
But I don't think that Wrestle Kingdom did. That was Wrestle Kingdom 1, wasn't it?
The original version.
Yeah, them against Muto and Chono.
Oh, is that what that was?
I think so. But, like, I don't think that show did all... Because, like, Wrestle Kingdom 1 was basically an all-Japan, New Japan show, right? The official... Or what Meltzer reported was it was only 18,000.
Ooh. Yeah, you are right. Yeah.
Muto and Chono, yeah.
Yeah, that was a show. It had Tanahashi and Taiyokea for the IWGP title. Suzuki and Nagata are there. Yep. Yeah, like you said, this is more like a coming together show when All Japan. Remember, they did a lot around that era of All Japan and New Japan together. That's when Kojima won both titles. Yeah. And they did have, I will say this about Tenkozy, is that they reunited pretty much every year around Tag League season.
Yes. There were some good matches. It was Tenkozy versus Suwama and Shuji Kondo. in the Real World Tag League in like 06, 07, 08, I think. Yeah. Around there.
And they're a good team.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, even late into their career, they were a fine team in a really bad division overall.
Former NWA World Tag Team Champions.
They do have a lot of titles and tournament wins to their name, if you want to look at the kayfabe. I wonder if that's why they get so many votes. Because they actually have a number of accolades as a team. It's just, you know, they're much better as singles. So,
I mean, if you're around my age, I'm 38. So I think if you're between like 35 and 45 and sort of got into Japanese wrestling when I did in the very late 90s, they were like the team. So I think that sort of can color that.
And Tenzan also has a very worthwhile team with Shono, like Team Wolf.
Oh, yeah.
As well. But they kind of broke up when Kojima left to All Japan for a few years, and they picked back up later on in the decade. I wonder what they would have been if Kojima had never actually left, because that was kind of prime years for Tenzan. By the time they reunited, even in the late 2000s, Tenzan was not where he was in, you know, 2003.
The thing is, if Kojima never left, like,
that's all we would have is a tag team run.
Yeah, because I think there would have been like they both been elevated to the main event, you know, and Tenzan was basically a whipping boy, like, transition champion when he held the title like several times, and that was all he got out of it. So
Tenzan must suffer booking was a very noted trope back then, but he was super over.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, one of my I think my favorite G1 final is him against Akiyama.
Yeah, mine too. That up there along with Tanahashi and Ibushi, those are the two that I always look at, but for a long time definitely Akiyama and Tenzan was the best one. Even the Tenzan match versus Tanahashi was a good final. He was a really good worker, man. I think he gets underrated sometimes.
Absolutely.
Kojima is also a really good player. Everybody knows that. And he was really hitting his stride by the time they reunited 2005, 2006. Very memorable match they had. I mean, it was long, like the match that they had for the double titles. It sparked all kinds of controversy. Do you think that counts in their team run, like their battle against each other for the titles?
I sort of think it should, although I think someone asked Dave and he was like, no, it's specifically about the Toyota versus Yamada stuff.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, it's like their work as a tag team. But like, I really think that any money you make off of the tag teams feuding after they break up should go into it, if you ask me.
I mostly agree with that. With Toyota and Yamada, it's tough because their feud in the hair match was, it's not just that they feuded with each other. They weren't even broken up as a team. That match and storyline was vital to their story as a team. Like, you couldn't tell the story of them as a tag team without that Summer of 92 feud. The Kojima Tenzan one, I don't think it was quite up there. Like, it wasn't but it was still a noteworthy moment that should count as well, in my opinion. But the fact remains, I would be more interested to look at Kojima and Tenzan as singles than as a tag team.
For sure. Absolutely.
Since we brought them up, let's talk about the other tag team on the ballot. 1987 gold combo, Manami Toyota and Toshio Yamada. Did you vote for them last year?
I did vote for them last year, but I didn't vote for them this year.
They were on the cut line of the three maximum. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you have so obviously we'll talk about who you did vote for later.
I think it fundamentally comes down to is like, I just thought who I did vote for were sort of more deserving. And to me, I think Toyota and Yamada are like, I have them of like all time tag teams, of my all time tag teams. I locked them down at number three.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm really following the lead, I think, in Alan Cunahan's really been pushing this, is like, if you think this team or this worker is like an all-time top 10, top 20 person, you should just put them on regardless of their other accolades.
Yeah.
Because they excel at that. And now, but then that gets into a more of a subjective question, but
true.
I voted for them because I think they're like, they're number three on greatest tag teams ever for me.
Yeah. we kind of talked about them last year. I'll briefly say what I feel on them. Their run was absolutely fantastic in ring and drawing power wise. The problem is that they were around so short. Like, their run was really only 2 to 3 years as a major tag team, and that could hurt them. And when you compare them to Beauty Pair, for example, even though they're a better team, like, if you look at just purely matches, they're obviously better workers. The problem is, you can't, just like I said with the Beauty Pair, you can't really tell the story of Joshi without Beauty Pair in it. Toyota and Yamada was a fantastic team, but Toyota on her own, you can't tell the story of Joshi without. But the team, you probably could have got there even though they were up there and one of the top teams ever as well. But still, they would definitely be somebody I would look at. Like, they're a worthy vote, even with the three maximum rule. They're somebody I would look at. We'll jump over to the next Joshi candidate, the only other one on the ballot, Meiko Satomura. Did you vote for her last year? What about this year?
I didn't, and I didn't vote for her this year. I just can't bring myself to do.
Are you telling me that NXT run didn't change your mind in the past
year? No. Look, I mean, I'll say this. I don't think if you're voting for Satomura and not the Beauty Pair, I think that's bizarre.
I'm not buying that.
And because I've seen a ballot like that. But look, I mean, I'm not going to begrudge you because I think there's definitely lots of people that think that she's like an all-time top 10 worker. And if she is, then you should go ahead and vote for her. I would definitely put her in like my top 100. But I don't think necessarily sort of barely keeping Joshi alive is necessarily a Hall of Fame accomplishment, if that makes any sense.
She was vital to the Dark Ages, and that's unfortunately why we can't see her full career, because a lot of it's just lost to time.
Yeah.
You know, and if we had had a more full-fledged view of that era, again, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, Azumi Hyuga, I always bring this up around that era, but nobody can see her work now because like 90% of it's gone. Like, you know, at this point, a lot has just faded away on the internet. So unfortunately, we can't see a lot of Meiko's greatest hits. We obviously have, even back to 20 plus years ago, her feud with Kong was always noted as a legendary type of, you know, rivalry in terms of just in-ring quality. And obviously she did great things with Stardom as well, was very integral. Obviously, they really took a jump up when Bushiroad bought them, but she gave them a bump. I mean, when Yuzupon retired for Stardom, they were really down for a long time. And when she came in for their interpromotional feud with Sendai, remember, we were coming right off the heels of the Gasly match, a lot of controversy, people leaving. She really helped establish Kairi Hojo as a top-tier player and a great worker with their matches as well. So she really influenced multiple eras, started her own company, obviously has influence because she trained so many people, a part of Sendai Girls, that was so vital to the scene in that way as well. She's definitely got a case. I just think in total, there's nothing that – even during the Dark era, she was integral, but it's not like she was the only one there. Like, there are a lot of people – Toyota was still a factor, like, by that point. You know, you can't just give her all the credit is all I'm saying. She was definitely
– some people do. Some people do give her all the credit.
I don't think that's very fair, though. I don't agree with that, but – I think that there were other people you can point to at the time. You know, remember, Zinjo died in 2005. Like, it lasted until then. I would say the Dark Ages were probably, realistically, probably closer to 98 or 99. Maybe even 97 if you go way back. But then things lasted. I would say things changed for the better around 2011-12 because you had stuff with Kana being very famous on the indie scene. You had Yuzupon was a big deal for Stardom at the time. But, I mean, that's a good, you know, 10 to 15 year period pretty much that you said the Joshis were in the Dark Ages, I would say. We can kind of, you know, finagle on what's the exact case. But there were definitely other people involved. It wasn't just her. I'm not believing that, to be honest. You know, and, like, look at JWP. It lasted all the way throughout that time, you know, more than Zinjo. And she wasn't a huge factor there, like to the extent of others. You know, But regardless, though, she has a case. I wouldn't put her as a top tier priority. I wouldn't vote for her of the three, in my opinion. But she's good, though. Like, a great, great, tremendous wrestler. Mm-hmm. I'm probably closer to you. She would be closer to a top 100 pick than a top 10. But she's a great, great wrestler and somebody who deserves all the roses that she can get. Moving in, this is a very controversial topic. Last year when me and Case talked about him. And in fact, he's so controversial that you wrote an article against his inclusion here that I saw. I clearly tried to troll me before we recorded here.
Well, in the interest of fairness, Voices of Wrestling also ran a pro Fujiwara article.
Yeah, my friend Eric wrote that, and he's like I said, I told him this on Twitter. If anybody's going to write an article about a shoot stylist, he's one of the top people I would trust for it. He knows what the hell he's talking about. We've talked about rings numerous times, especially when I was putting in results on Cage Match. And when Jack Shares Graphs was putting all those ring shows up, man, those were good times. But that guy's really knowledgeable. He's a legit source for this stuff. But you wrote a counter article, definitely no shade on them. Hey, we've all got opinions. Some people are for, some people are against. I'm not begrudging anybody. And I read your article. Do you want to summarize that for the people out there? Why you think he's not a Hall of Famer? Or did you write that and then just voted for him anyway?
No, I did not vote for him. I just think that all three of the sort of criteria, they just don't add up all together to a Hall of Fame vote for me. I mean, there's definitely meat on the bones of the argument. It's not like he's the worst wrestler on there, but there was always people ahead of him. And like, as I said in the article, as I researched this, I just gained more respect for Carl Gotch. Because all of his disciples were really all inspired by Carl Gotch.
That's true, to be fair.
And Gotch like sort of was giving like Funaki and Minoru Suzuki advice when they started Pancrase as well.
That so, may be true.
And you know, and I was going through like, I mean, look, this is again subjective, but I was going through like observer votes for matches of the year and like best technical wrestler, and you know, Fujiwara would appear, but he wouldn't get ranked very high, and there was lots of other Japanese wrestlers ahead of him. And like, if you look, like, again, look, I think the decline of shoot style is something that has to be taken into account. And look, your Takada, Maeda, are in there. Satoru Sayama is in there, although really that's really just for Tiger Mask, but you can extend it if you want. Minoru Suzuki's in there. Masakatsu Funaki's in the Hall of Fame. So all of those guys that were so pivotal were there, and I think Fujiwara is just below, just a bit below them.
You know, that's interesting, and I pose this question to Case. I don't think me and you actually talked about this last year, so I'm going to bring it up now. What you say about shoot style, it's not – it was prominent for a time, and it's not anymore, and it hasn't been for a long time. That's completely, completely factual.
Well, and also, the guys that wrestle shoot style now all more resemble Takada and Maeda than they do Fujiwara.
And that's true, but where I'm going with this is, do we take away – like I said, in a hypothetical scenario, because right now – a lot of the high impact style is prevalent in wrestling. Would you agree with that? Hard hitting, big flying moves, and stuff that you would.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. That's very prominent now. Let's say in 25 years, something that maybe we can't even imagine comes along. Maybe they go back to shoot style for all we know, or something crazy that we don't even think of knows ends up happening then. And the stuff we see now, it dies out and it's irrelevant in the future. Does that take away the influence that we've gotten from it to the point that it died out? Because I would argue Fujiwara was heavily, heavily influential, but not in a long time. You know, like, you know, at the time, I mean, he directly predated battle art style, you know, trained a lot of the guys there, came in there, was very influential. They were a top – people forget. Battle Arts was very successful in the late 90s when they started out. They had big shows. They were bringing in crazy foreigners, Bob Backlund and all these people, and they had
some
big
players.
Yeah, and he was directly influential upon all of that. So does that not count now because we're away from it all? Or should that count? Because I personally think it should count the same way I would count somebody who's very influential in the high flying range, even if that dies out in the future.
Well, high flying has not died out.
No, we're talking about a hypothetical scenario entirely with this. And I'm not saying that's even going to happen or even likely at all. I don't think it will, for the record. But I'm saying if it did, let's say a scandal broke out and there was a dramatic industry-wide shift to tone down high-flying and everything went back to ground-based wrestling somehow, that wouldn't take away the influence that high-flyers would have, even if we look at it years from now, in my opinion.
Sure. And it's not that there aren't – like, there's still elements of shoot style. I mean, look at all the clean finishes in Japanese wrestling.
Well, yeah. That wasn't necessarily because of him, but because of
that, but some shoot style.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, again, I think it's – yeah, so – but a lot of the biggest stars are already recognized, and I think Fujiwara just sort of falls below that, as I said. So, I mean, the question is, how much of that influence do you want to tie directly to him? Now, you can link that to battle arts, absolutely. But, I mean, battle arts also – I mean, yes, they were very successful in what they were, but they were not – I mean, they weren't even FMW.
They died out after their sponsorship, and it was a short run, like with battle arts. As much as I love them, they're my favorite company of all time. But the fact is, they were very influential, and he was very influential for them, along with many others. Again, he helped train a lot of great wrestlers in the past as well. Even later on, remember, he was one of the main coups for All Japan when they brought him in for the Champion Carnival in the early 2000s. And he did good numbers when he came in as well in the main events of those shows. I don't think we can completely dismiss him as a draw, either an important figure, whether he's lesser than some of these other guys. I mean, obviously, if you compare him to Maeda and Takada, I mean, let's face it. The truth is PWFG was much, much less successful than the other two. And I get that as well. And then I think that the influence has to be counted, but it's more of a subjective philosophical question that you have to ask yourself to count it.
To be nice, that PWFG Dome show did like a legit 25,000.
Yeah, that's true in an era where things were kind of inflated a lot, but still.
No, that was pretty much like it was reported at the time that they did big walk up at the end. And it was generally considered that was like I think they might have claimed more than 25, but I still think that's a feather in Fujiwara's cap, no question.
Yeah, and he did, like I said, he did draw a lot there, going in there at those times, like you said. But if you compare him to Maeda Takada, he doesn't really have a leg to stand on that level. I just don't know, like, could you compare him to other people? I mean, we're going to get to some people on these other ballots where they never drew anything that you could report that they did, like that Fujiwara did, rather. Like some of these guys we're going to talk about on the American side, especially. Can you really claim anything for like some of these people? I don't think you can. So I think when you look at the Hall of Fame standard that we have now, I think it's worth – let's put it this way. I wouldn't put that as a negative on Fujiwara. Maybe he's not at the Hall of Fame standard, but I wouldn't take it away from him. And the influence I would say is great. So really now we're at the point where the deciding factor is the in-ring work. And this, again, this is completely subjective. What would you rate him as on that? Would you say you were a fan of his, a big fan, you think he's one of the best ever? Or would you say you didn't even like him?
Oh, no, he's a great worker and lots of fun stuff and like the headbutts and everything. But he's like, again, with Satomura, like I'd put him in more of the top 100 than the top 10.
Okay. I would recommend everybody out there to read both Gerard and Eric's articles because they both have good facts up and down. And I think that's where, you know, also in Eric's article, he had a ton of matches too that you could watch if you're maybe not familiar with them. But if you like hard hitting and submission based wrestling, Fujiwara is a dude to look out for as well, I would say. Do you give him a lot credit for the New Japan stuff in the late 80s, which he was a major factor in, but maybe wasn't the dude of the feud?
Obviously he was a key role in that, but if you sort of like go back, it's like, okay, well, Maeda and Takada are the guys. So in my article, I like compared him to like Scott Hall or like Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson. They were there and people remember them, but they weren't like necessarily like the driving forces of these factional feuds.
Worth noting that they never got to have the Maeda and Inoki singles match that we wanted, where you did get the Fujiwara and Inoki match, which did draw very well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's an interesting case. Like, it seems like this is a guy that's going to be debated forever. He trained a lot of great wrestlers as well. I do think that needs to count for, like, not just the battle arts guys, but then you look at the Pancrase guys he was heavily involved in. You know, he helped train Maeda and Takada, if my memory is correct, that as well. So he deserved credit for that. Ken Dory was a disciple of his. I mean, this show is really about is trying to get Shinobu Ken Dory nominated for the Hall of Fame, I think, ultimately. But it all started with Fujiwara. But I think I would vote for him even with the Max 3, to be honest with you personally. But we will see who you picked going in. Let's go with another older player before we get into the more modern candidates. Hayabusa, did you vote for him last time? What about this time?
I didn't vote for him last time, and I didn't vote for him this time, but the more I think of it, I'm sort of beginning to lean that I think I will vote for him next year. I can't shake the influence. It just
keeps, exactly.
I can't shake it. And also, the thing that I was thinking about this, and I know that Adam Berger at Voice of Wrestling has dug deep into Hayabusa's drawing record. I mean, FMW's drawing, even after Onita, was pretty darn good if you put it into a historical perspective. But what sort of kneecapped the company was like the amount of debt that Onita left with it, which ultimately caught up with them, especially after Hayabusa suffered that tragic injury. And sort of when we're thinking about like smaller companies and everything like that, like, you know, was like people sort of talk about how long Dragon Gate was the number two company in Japan, but Dragon Gate was not really ever drawing what like in the 90s, like the number three and number four companies were in Japan. If you think about like Zenjo at its peak in the 90s or FMW at its peak in the 90s, and you could call them like three and four, and were way ahead of what Dragon Gate has been doing over the last 20 years.
Oh, absolutely. It's not even close.
So I think that, you know, if you look at that sort of in that perspective, Hayabusa's drawing case, it looks a little better too.
Yeah, it was from where I see it, things dropped off after Onita left, certainly. And then when Hayabusa had that injury, the company died pretty much. Like it was a complete cratering when he left. So there's pros and cons, but there's no question that he may be among the top influential cases of anybody.
Look at Will Ospreay.
Exactly.
Which I think also because of that, maybe we need to reexamine Mara Fuji because he dropped off.
That is true. As well, he was on the ballot, and yeah, he fell off along with Sugira as well. But Hayabusa, so influential to all of wrestling. You will see a Hayabusa knockoff in a million different indies, whether it's in America, Mexico, like England. There's been those guys that have come along for decades now after his retirement. Just an unbelievable performer in that sense. In ring wise, he's really kind of a hit or miss guy. But he's kind of like, in my opinion, when I watch him, he's almost a poor man's Toyota in some ways, because he's known for being kind of this sloppy type of dude, like a spectacular guy who sometimes didn't always stick the landing. It was kind of messed up a lot. But in a way, it was kind of good for his particular character.
Yeah.
The guy who is fighting against the vein of this, like not an indie company like we would know now, but the underdog, like outsider company that is FMW, he is the new leader, the young guy coming in, you know, that never really got past the torch, actually. Like, Onita never really put him over. But no. regardless of that, he was kind of the next face, and he was fighting against that. So he had to do this crazy stuff to help himself and the company. It fit his character to be that way. So I used to actually not like him that much, but as time has gone along, I've warmed up to him as a wrestler.
Absolutely. When I started watching Puro, I mean, he was still active, although FMW was sort of a bit of a joke because that was peak for Yuki.
Yeah, sports entertainment
philosophy. But people were still like all about, like, you know, Hayabusa 96, 97 for sure.
H doesn't have that historical legacy that Hayabusa had. Ed Shawn Michaels coming in that time. It was that's also another thing I've kind of grown as historical. It doesn't really have anything to do with the Hall of Fame, but a lot of years that got criticized. But when you compare them to like an All Japan, for example, All Japan just kept doing the same stuff over and over until it got really stale. Yeah. At least FMW tried to do something remarkably different. It sucked. It wasn't as good as the stuff that we saw before, but still, at least they tried something different. And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So let's get to the last three, the more modern candidates here. Shima.
I did not vote for Shima last year. I did not vote for Shima this year. I will.
Assuming, you will not vote for him next year?
I will vote for him next year, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because I think my other two are getting in. So
Yeah, you might be right.
So, I mean, Shima again, like, I mean, clearly a draw. Not a huge draw, but I think some of the drawing has to be in the feather in his cap. Like the way that Dragon Gate business dropped when Strong Hearts left, the way that Strong Hearts, you know, spiked Wrestle One attendance, because that was their first big stop. I mean, obviously he's had his failures with OWE and whatever Great is now, which is a company that's going to fold as soon as the Ledet decides to stop pouring money into it. Like, let's be honest, that's probably what's going to happen.
Yes.
I'm someone that generally enjoys Great and doesn't have the contempt for it that some people do. But, I mean, I think that's probably just facing reality on it. But, again, Shima, like, I think you could say Shima was top, 20 worker, top 30 worker, definitely top 50 worker for well over a decade, and just incredibly influential, too.
Yeah, I think influence is his main sticking point that you would go to. But pretty much ever since, I think he's actually a better – like overall wrestler than Hayabusa was, like much more clean cut. Yeah. The other two, it's like Hayabusa is better than you at both of these things. That your calling card, both drawing and influence. I would put Hayabusa above Shima personally. And Shima's great. I don't think he's a bad vote if you vote for him. In fact, like if we had unlimited options, I could definitely see myself voting for him because he did mean a lot. To Dragon Gate especially, and the style that influenced, such really helped influence a lot of wrestlers, which he was like kind of the head honcho of making.
Well, and also people bring up like he helped discover, well, he didn't discover the Bucks, but he gave the Bucks a big spotlight in Ricochet and some foreigners too.
Pac,
UHA Nation.
Yeah, that's another one.
You know,
Apollo Crews.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. That's all fair. Like, he's a good candidate. I wouldn't put him in my top three, but if you did, I really don't have an argument against him.
I just felt there were more. Like, that's the thing. Shima was always like someone that I just barely missed out on.
Yeah, so. I still would put Hayabusa above him, though. Like, if you vote for Shima, not Hayabusa.
Yes, I probably would do the same. Yeah.
Yeah, and like if you were mentioning who's getting in, like if Beauty Pair doesn't get in, we have to ask some questions about everything. I would say because it's just.
From my understanding, Beauty Pair is trending to go in. So
that's true. We do have the Hall of Fame ballot tracker on Twitter that we can consult as well. Last two here, the two most – probably the ones that our listeners probably know the most of on a personal level.
And very similar cases sort of in some ways.
Yeah, let's talk about him. Let's start off with the Stone Pitbull, Tomohiro Ishii here. He's another controversial guy because he's a guy that certain voters like to kind of poke at a little bit as undeserving. What's your take on him?
I mean, I'm voting for Ishii. He deserves to go in for the longevity of his work, how long he's been a high-level worker. I know that I think he was an amazing worker even before, like, when people thought he was. Going back to, like, Michinoku Pro and Ricky Pro and that sort of thing.
We need more of this to make tape, though. Like, we want to see more of him back then.
Yeah, and so I think that he should get in work alone for longevity. He made the G, like, the G1 Climax is a draw because, at least internationally, because of Ishii.
You could apply that to New Japan World as a whole.
Remember? Oh yeah. And look, here's the thing. On its own, it's not a Hall of Fame drawing case, but he's a draw in the States and in the UK, and he has headlined some pretty decent houses in Japan.
So every time he's gotten a chance, he hasn't been unsuccessful. The problem is he doesn't have there's a very, very small track record of him being a main eventer in Japan that you could look at. But when he has gotten the chances, he's never not succeeded. You know, he's always been a good draw.
I mean, he can sell out like an Edeon arena or something.
Yeah, he just never got the ball. Like, who's to say how far he would have gone? Like, if they could have, you know, but I guess that's kind of like a negative too to a lot of people, is that ultimately, I think to a lot of people, he's not a main eventer and never was, so he shouldn't be a Hall of Famer. But what you're saying is more accurate to the criteria as Dave Meltzer listed to the Hall of Fame. It's stated directly that if you are over the top in one of the three categories, that is a valid Hall of Fame vote.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're saying he's an in-ring candidate. I agree. Like, I think, like, of everybody on this ballot, nobody has his longevity of greatness. Well,
okay. Also, I think that his historical influence is positive also.
I totally agree. I said that last year, DeCase, that he was very underrated influence-wise. You look at how even people on his own roster, compare how Shibata and Goto worked before Ishii got his big push in 2012 and 13. Watch Shibata before he came back to when he came back and started wrestling Ishii. That's a totally different wrestler that you can see there. And not to mention all of the Ishii clones that have spawned from his style, that he was completely at the forefront run. Totally influential player in the modern era.
Yeah. And it's like, well, everyone has their list of people they want to see against Ishii, right? You know?
Yeah.
Kingston's, or like in the UK, you've got like Luke Jacobs now, who's also like a, you know, shorter, rounder guy like Ishii and everything like that. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, even now, I mean, he was among the top MVP candidates for this year's G1 as we speak in 2023. I would have put him up there along with Ospreay.
Is there anyone that's performed in a tournament consistently, tournaments like he has, like
10 years in a row? And it's another thing for the four, you know, the four Heavenly Kings, four pillars of All Japan. Not all of the Champion Carnival matches are there for us to view again, but a lot of them were cut out for a reason well.
They sort of toned it down on those, a lot of those block shows and everything like that.
I think we can presume that no match of the year candidates happened with the Eagle involved in All Japan, or Kamala too. That's
right.
We can't say that for sure, but that's just my gut feeling on that end. With Ishii, it's like pretty much everybody has their best matches versus him, and that's been the case for years and years now, going into the G1. Even if it's somebody like a Taichi coming in, I mean, he was rated as a horrible worker for so many years. And then he had the big match versus Ishii in the G1. That springboard to him doing great things with the team with Zach and doing a lot of great wrestling afterwards. Ishii had, again, Shibata's kind of big return match, the first match that really got a lot of buzz that he had. Him and Goto have had great matches. Him and Tanahashi, like, legendary match to me. And we are still waiting on his well-deserved title shot for him being Okada in 2016 in the G1, which he never received.
I think he's one of Omega's best opponents.
Yeah, I agree with that. A very underrated series of matches they had as well. Like I said, you can go up and down the list, and he's had great matches with everybody in the New Japan roster to a greater extent than I think anybody could. In-ring... absolutely, like, I would put him up there. Historical significance and influence, I definitely think he has a case at drawing power, he never really got the chance, but I don't see any evidence that he was a negative draw or he failed.
No. And I think, I mean, maybe this is grading on a curve, but the fact that he could still be like a low level draw in other countries, I think, is something.
Yeah, it's worth mentioning. Like, it's no doubt about that. But yeah, I think he's a great candidate, definitely in the mix for a top three spot in my opinion. And then the last guy in Japan, Shingo Takagi. You said their cases were very similar. Why don't you break him down?
Well, I mean, it's also a work case because we're going on 20 years. I think next year will be 20 years of Shingo.
Yep.
And he's right up there with Ishii, just in terms of just the sheer amount of work, a volume of work that he's turned out. He's become another highlight of the G1, and I guess even that Best of the Super Juniors that he worked.
Oh yeah, definitely, that was a great one.
2019. So, and he was, you know, a key part of Dragon Gate for what, 14 years. So, and he was successful there. Had a lot of great matches there, like his matches with like Shima and like Mochizuki and everything. So I think it's all there. He might have a better drawing case than Ishii, just in just over the long haul.
And he didn't get the chance to be the champion in two different companies. He was the main guy.
Yep. So I think it's all there. And he's a bit of a draw internationally as well.
Totally agree with that. I would put his drawing case, like I said,
it's not a Hall of Fame drawing case on its own, but
I agree. And that's what I was going to say.
It actually makes it stronger than Ishii, in my opinion, actually.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think his drawing case is much better than Ishii's, just because we have, with Ishii, we don't have evidence that he's a non-draw. But we do have evidence that Shingo has been successful multiple times. I mean, his run in Berserk, that was one of the peak periods of Dragon Gate, when he was the top heel of the company. And then obviously he's done a lot of great things. I personally never thought he would be the world champion when he went to New Japan, but somehow it happened.
Some of it was more of circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely. Osprey leaving, Ibushi had the meltdown with the injury and all that. It took a lot of dominoes to fall. And ever since he's lost the title, he's been basically Ishii level.
It's funny because I think, look, I think the fundamentals of New Japan are strong, just in terms of how much young talent they have. Like, clearly, like look at what Shota Umino is now able to do. Yeah. But I think their downcycling of Shingo was a huge mistake.
He had a lot left in the tank.
Absolutely.
And listen, even in, this is no kind of drawing thing, but it's his King of Pro Wrestling series versus Taichi was wonderfully entertaining. The 30 count match that they had, he made that title actually somewhat cool, which nobody else has been able to do. And I think that should count him as a worker. Totally could see you having a Hall of Fame case. I personally think Ishii is a better wrestler than he is, because we've had them for years now, face to face, and every year I think Ishii's had a better year purely in ring than Shingo has. Shingo did, I would argue, get chances earlier than Ishii. You know, he was a main eventer by the late 2000s in Dragon Gate. Shingo was, and even from the beginning, him and BB Hulk had a really the start of a legendary feud. Even, you know, in their early days, 2005. They had a fantastic match, and they've wrestled a bunch over the years. He meant something to the company. Great character. And, you know, I wouldn't argue against him, surely, but I personally probably – I don't – the thing is with Ishii, I see him as one of the greatest in-ring performers of all time, to the point where it's overwhelming that he has to be considered up there. With Shingo, he would be – again, he'd probably be in my top 100 – but I don't see him as high as Ishii on my all-time list. Even though there's a case, I wouldn't completely discredit you if you think he's one of the greats. But for me, I don't hold him in that esteem. And I really don't hold him on any of the three. Influence to be determined. I don't think he has much of a case, to be honest with you, at this point. In years past, years later, maybe we'll see another hypothetical scenario. I think
I think you can say him making being on top of Dragon Gate when it was the number two promotion is a certain level of historical significance.
I suppose. I count that more a drawing power more than anything, but that's just me. You're not necessarily wrong with that. And again, it was like, to me, that's kind of like the last high point they've had was when Berserk was at the base. Because remember, Berserk kind of transitioned to Antios, right? And that sucked. Like, a lot of the fans really got turned off by all of that. Then the Stronghearts left, and things took a big hit. And then he left, and things took a big hit. So, like, Dragon Gate, I don't think has ever gotten to the heights they had since he was the champion in his heel run.
Well, there you go. Just another... Although,
I like Yoshioka's reign, personally, but it wasn't... The company was not clearly as hot as it was, which was the champion. So, yeah, who are your three overall to kind of wrap this up that you voted for in Japan?
So, Beauty Pair, Ishii, and Shingo Takagi.
Okay, you went with both of the modern guys here. Okay, so you don't have to choose. I'm putting them both on there, you said.
Yeah, and so, and next year, well, I'm probably going to be voting for Shima and Hayabusa.
I definitely think Beauty Pair is getting in. The other two will be interesting.
I think Ishii actually has a better chance of getting in than Shingo.
Where did they track last year? You know, we need to see who had the better percentage like last year. But I don't know. Because I see a lot of people speak out against him as a candidate. You know, like a lot of people think he shouldn't be in just because, again, he's never been a main eventer, and that's what people will point to, not necessarily counting the work, so to speak, of it. You know, last year, you know, we had Taue Kawada. That was their first year in the bout as a team, and they went in. You had Ibushi and Naito both go in. I was really surprised that Ibushi got in, because remember, that was in the middle of all of the, like, the stuff.
Yep.
Because I thought he was going to go way down in the ratings, but somehow, I guess... Listen, he stood up to a big company, so that resonated with the voters. Clearly that. It made them, you know, a lot more recognized, I guess.
He's not adding to his case now.
It's getting worse more than anything. Shima did make a jump up last year. He went from 23 to 34 last year as a candidate. That's pretty interesting. Now maybe Shima could make a thing. Ishii had a 38% rating, so he's still got a ways to go. And Shingo was at 21, so he was a lot lower. And
I think what happened, but like, you know, your Naitos and Ibushis are off.
Yep.
So that just really clears the way, I think, especially for Ishii.
We'll see how it plays out. Beauty Pair is slam dunk, yes. Honestly, I think everybody has a case, except for Inoki and Sakaguchi and Tenkozy. Like, those were the two teams I would definitively say no on.
I would say, yes, those are the weakest on the list.
Yeah, everyone else, I think, has at least a case for it. I would go Beauty Pair, Fujiwara, and maybe Hayabusa would be the third. But Toyota and Yamada's height was so strong that it's tough. I just value longevity a lot in my candidates. Just if I'm voting, like, that's what I would do. And Fujiwara, he might be the closest to Ishii in terms of a work rate, in terms of longevity, because he had so many great matches over decades.
Yep.
But those would be my picks. Let's move on to the U.S., and you made your votes clear. The other regions, obviously, we're a Japan-centric podcast, so we wanted to dedicate special focus on that.
Yes.
But we'll kind of go through these really quickly, and we'll just kind of briefly talk about them. This region has a lot of people on it, to be honest, compared to the Japan region. Let's get into some of the new guys we have here. The Young Bucks. I think they're the most polarizing lot of people. Where do you lean?
I voted for them. They're slam dunk, if you ask me. Like, just the longevity, their influence. And look, I'll get into this again later. And frankly, Dana Massey, Matt's wife, deserves some of the credit for this. But they really sort of transformed how indie wrestlers market themselves, with like merch-wise and the money they can make.
Totally agree with that. I haven't always been their biggest fans in terms of wrestling, but I do think you can't deny that they've had a lot of great matches over the years. and their influence level is very, very high. I also think Meltzer himself contributed to a lot of that as well. without him knowing, and not even like
the shot. And you got to give him forming AEW in there too. Regardless of what one may think of that company right now.
Well, yeah, when we talked last year, my opinion on AEW was probably a lot more positive.
Yes, than absolutely. Right now.
But, you know, you go back, like, without Meltzer being at those PWG shows and putting that out there on his newsletter, you're looking at a couple of hundred people probably buying that, maybe a couple of thousand that are seeing those matches. But thanks to Meltzer and the buzz he helped get those guys to create, I think that was a big part of it as well. And again, that's not a shot at anybody. I think it's totally valid that they were able to impress him that much, and they monetized it to great success. Their Japan run is kind of like a blip on the radar in their overall case to me. They had some good matches, but there's nothing I would consider really too special. A lot of times it wasn't even their fault, just the nature of the junior tag division. You're just not going to be able to have that many great matches.
Everybody knows Gato's tag team booking is bizarre.
Yeah, exactly. No real sense that they made a big difference business-wise. But in America,
I think they were very important for New Japan's overseas expansion, though.
That's true.
Maybe Omega was the top, but they still had a major role to play.
That's true. I really think they missed the boat. Like, they should have had a plan ready for New Japan America after that tag match the Young Bucks and the Golden Lovers had. Like, that should have been immediately set up. Like, they had the buzz there to do something really special. And unfortunately, like, the thing is, the New Japan in America, it kind of left when AEW started. And I mean, obviously that's a good thing in their case because they were a big part of that. But I don't think them leaving really hurt New Japan that much compared to Omega. Definitely helped. Yeah, it definitely helped AEW, though, to have them along. And they've had some great matches. Their series with the Lucha Brothers was awesome. Yeah. This trio series they had this year with the Lucha Brothers and Pac, they've done some big things. There's been some stuff I didn't think was super great. And definitely, I don't think they're a great fit for any TV company, actually, just because their promos are just – they're not great, to say the least. But in terms of an in-ring talent, they definitely mattered. They mean a lot to the company. Their influence level is so high, you can't deny that. And I think that they've been going for, what, almost 20 years now, like in the ring.
We're getting there, yeah.
Yeah. You know, they also helped along PWG. They were major factors as well, you know, among the top.
People were getting, like, indie companies were naming shows after the Bucks.
Yeah.
Like, they were, like, a top indie draw.
How much do you think, because we mentioned it with Satomura, that her keeping the Joshi scene alive, or being, that's really not true, but they, being a very big part of keeping it alive during the Dark Ages, that's not necessarily a Hall of Fame level thing to point at. Would you say the same about an indie team? Like, also, would that be a Hall of Fame level draw to you to be a top indie draw in America?
It's hard. I guess I would have to say what the historical significance was. Because I think if you're a top indie draw, you might also have historical significance, sort of like Sabu, sort of in a way. And, like, also the thing is, though, like, their contemporaries, they had Steen and Generico and Chris Hero and, you know, lots of others that were, like, key figures in that indie boom. Yeah. Oh, and Claudio, yeah, because although he went to WWE before those other guys. But they were all key in that indie boom.
Good point. Let's see how the Briscoes hold up, because this is the second new team on the American ballot. Well, what say you about them? Another of those contemporaries that you could throw in a big part of the team.
You know what? I didn't vote for them, and I sort of regret that I didn't vote for them.
I think, yeah.
The more I think about it, the more you can say they had 20 years almost of incredible output. I think what you're doing is you're going on their work, which was, they had lots of great matches over a long period of time, and I think their promos matter too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Promos, one of the best promos of the 21st century as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, 1,000,000% agree. Jay cut some amazing promos.
Yeah.
And Mark was an integral part of the team. And they were great as a team. Obviously, everyone would point to Jay's singles run.
Yeah.
And Mark is building his on AEW now. I just had a singles match of Dynamite earlier this week as we record. But promos in ring, they are just an amazing, amazing team. Like throughout all of their years, I personally hold them in higher regard than the Young Bucks in the ring. And they have great longevity. They don't have the historical significance or the influence that the Young Bucks would have.
Yeah, I think the Bucks are going to be a bigger influence 10 to 15 years from now in terms of the teams.
I agree. And they did bigger things with what they had with the Bullet Club and the Mania that they had during that shorter period. The Briscoes never got to the heights that the Bucks did. But for an overall consistent team, I think they have to be up there. And it's going to be very interesting because it's always said, and sadly to say, in the Observer, the death bump is always a big factor in some of these. And this is their first time in. Yep. Is that going to play a role in this?
I think so. Although if they don't get in this year, how are they going to be able to get to 60?
Because
but I will vote for them next year if they're still on the ballot. I think, I don't know. It was just like, I went back and forth on it. It was probably my hardest decision, actually.
I would vote, if I were voting, the Bucks and the Briscoes would both be on my ballot, personally. What about the Hardy Boys?
Okay, so, you know, name a great Hardy Boys match.
Yeah.
Not involving a ladder.
Impossible.
Jeff Hardy might have a case on his own.
What about some of those deletion matches?
Well, but you could put that. I guess you could assign that to a tag team, or you could assign that to them as singles.
They never had a tag team version of that?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, no. that was a whisper.
I've not watched every match that has taken place at the Hardy compound.
See, you didn't do your homework, clearly, Gerard, here. That should be mandatory viewing for all reporters.
They are very influential. There's no question, though.
Even to the Bucks?
Even to the Bucks. Probably the Motor City Machine Guns, too, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
And, you know, I just think of this because, like, you know, my girlfriend, she's not like a... She, like, watched wrestling for a bit in the mid-2000s because her younger brother did. But her two favorite wrestlers were Jeff Hardy and Rey Mysterio. Right? And she was just... She's one of those casuals, as you'd call them, right?
And yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly. And so that... But it's just funny to me that that sticks in the mind of, you know, a more casual audience, right? And
I wonder if Jeff would have a better case on his own than them as a
team. I absolutely think he would, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I just can't do it.
Yeah, I can't ride with them either. I agree with you on that. What about the Outsiders? National?
No.
Yeah, exactly. That's all you said.
Horrible matches. If you wanted to induct like Hogan, Hall, and Nash as the NWO, I suppose.
Yeah.
But they didn't have that many matches, and it's hard to sort of pin them down as any sort of draw beyond like that their first appearances in WCW when they were like the true outsiders.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like they're a Hall of Fame candidate based on vibes, pretty much. Like there's no actual evidence.
And of course, you know, Nash is a horrible booker and draw.
Yeah. Right. Hey, Razor Ramon was a great worker in his days. WCW Scott Hall? I don't think he really had a lot of good matches. Well,
you know, no, he didn't. He was, poor Scott Hall was battling a lot of.
Yeah, obviously that's true. But he was a great worker at one point.
But absolutely. But but I don't think there's much of a Scott Hall singles case either.
No, you're right. I agree with that. What about the Steiner brothers, another tag team here, Rick and Scott.
I think so. When I started watching wrestling, was the Steiners had already broken up.
Yeah,
I think that they have a lot of amazing matches, no question. But I think if you were like a 10-year-old kid watching WCW in 1991-92, that's going to have a very different effects, because they do get a lot of votes, and I think there's a lot of wrestlers that vote for them. I just don't think, I just can't put it all together.
Yeah.
And like, and if you look at the influential tag teams, like, I do think the Hardys were probably more influential than the Steiners. If you think about current today.
I agree with that. Like, when you put it that way, like, you're right.
Yeah. And I, the Bucks are going to be more influential over time. And, well, and Rick Steiner obviously hasn't helped himself, but even from the criteria, I just don't think they measure up.
Do you think what happened earlier this year with Rick and his transphobic is going to hurt
Absolutely.
Them? Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And it was nice to see, you know, the wrestling community be very, like, completely unified and being like, you're a piece of Rick Steiner. Because I don't think that necessarily would have happened 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Like, when that happened, he had no support, pretty much. And he should not have. I agree with that. Yeah.
But I don't think that necessarily would have been the case in a different era.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think that's going to hurt him. As a team, like, if you look at their absolute peak, they had awesome matches and performances and stuff. But like you said, there's just not enough there overall for me to really go ride with them anyway.
I think they probably argue that they were a bit of a draw in Japan, but I don't think it's a Hall of Fame level.
Yeah, they're a good team, like, maybe even very good, maybe even great at points, but not a Hall of Fame level, in my opinion. All right, let's run through these singles guys here. What about Mox?
I voted for Mox.
Oh, another vote. You are AEW, Mr. AEW voter here.
Look, okay, so here's the thing. I see a lot of people putting Mox in the too soon to tell. I don't think so, because I think that he had an influential big indie run. I'm putting this all together. Him in the WWE, he was part of the Shield. But when he broke off, and this is before, like, when you get to 2018 and 2019, they totally bungle Mox. But like 2015, 2016, he is one of the most over guys working. He worked like 200 matches in like multiple years in WWE, maybe even more than 200. And he was one of the top merch sellers. I know, like, casual wrestling fans that were buying like Dean Ambrose shirts for their kids. And of course, he was a key part of AEW, has steadied the ship, has been a star in New Japan. I think it's all there. If you add this all together, I don't see the point in waiting for Mox.
Yeah. Maybe you could say it's a negative on me, but I'm really of the candidate, like, the type of person. I think the Wrestling Observer would be significantly improved if they upped the age, you know, qualifications
or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of 35, I think just changing to 45 would do a lot of good for a lot of people, and it would make it a lot better, in my opinion. I think I hate, even when it's somebody like Okada, who was said to be the greatest slam dunk candidate, and was obviously, like, if you look at the history of the Observer, is no doubt an Observer Hall of Famer. I hate it. Why are we talking about somebody like this? Like, it's in their prime. That, to me, doesn't vibe with me. You know, how can you tell if somebody's a legend when they're still, like, doing stuff?
Right.
And I just don't feel that way about Moxley. Like, if you go by the letter of the law, he definitely has a case. I mean, he's been very, very important to the world of AEW, especially. I think that's really where he made his bones, pretty much. Great matches. A lot of people have definitely put him up as a Wrestler of the Year level candidate even this year. Mm-hmm. Great promo, great guy on TV to have. There's really no flaws in his game, other than, like you said, the end of the WWE run when he was less motivated. You could point that, but who can blame him, man? I mean, they were having him.
He was a pretty big star at one point as a singles there, though.
Yeah, he was a top star at one point. By the end, though, when they had him wearing the gas mask and all that, everything fell apart, and he sucked. And even he probably knows he sucked pretty much by then. But regardless, though, I would not feel right voting for somebody like him when we have legends that aren't in the Hall of Fame and you're seeing a guy like this. It just doesn't sit right with me. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's my fault. But that's just how I feel about it. I would not vote for him. But you are well within your right, too. And you made a lot of good points as well. Do you think he'll get in the overall vote?
That's no, close. I'm more confident in, like, the Bucks getting in.
The Bucks, I think, are definitely getting in.
I think Moxie might crack 50, but I don't know if he'll get in. I don't feel slam dunk on that.
Yeah, I think the Bucks are for sure going in. Moxley will be a different case. Let's go through here. Roman Reigns, another fun candidate to talk about.
People are trying to retcon Roman's singles career now.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, he just hasn't been a proven draw long enough for me to vote for him. If he has another couple of years like this, if they don't bungle the bloodline and, you know, the WWE diehards are beginning to turn against it.
Yeah, I've noticed that as well. Ever since SummerSlam, that match with Jay.
Yeah, main event Jey Uso. Look, if he continues to put a couple more years of this, then I have no issue voting for Roman Reigns. But his actual time being a difference-making star has been way too short. I mean, early on in the bloodline, like at the beginning, after he came back during the pandemic, Joe Lanza did the research and like Sasha Banks' quarter hours were higher than Roman Reigns' quarter hours at the beginning of the bloodline. And then it took Sami Zayn. And again, but you can't deny the business success that he's turned around WWE, but it just hasn't been long enough for me to pull the trigger. And before that, he was a failure. So
I actually thought he was way better, just me as a fan watching. I thought he was way, way better during his babyface run as a wrestler.
His work has regressed because it's just yelling at people in the ring. And
exactly. I think he's significantly gotten worse since he's been the heel.
Yeah, he was pretty good at one point. Like the match against Brock at WrestleMania
31. Yeah, when he had to sell. I thought that was a great match.
Yeah, yeah.
Personally, you have all the Shield tags, which he did a great job in.
Of course.
I really liked him as a worker. I thought he was kind of underrated for a while. But unfortunately, like now, I hate him. I hate his matches. Like, I hate the storyline. He sucks. Like, there's no...
Unfortunately, look, I simply cannot acknowledge him.
We cannot acknowledge the Tribal Chief on the Eastern Lariat, unfortunately. No. But you do acknowledge Jake Lee with his glove.
Yes. But look, I will vote for Roman if he continues to do big business over the next couple of years.
My only problem with him now is, how can we say he's this big draw when he never wrestles on these shows?
I know. Well, this is also the debate around giving him Wrestler of the Year, because Wrestler of the Year is a combination of work and business, and there's not much work.
It's not even good or bad. He just never does anything. This is the problem. Like, and it's not like when he goes, it makes this big difference or anything. Like, the company's hot. And I'm not going to disparage him and say he's like an anti-draw. Again, there's no evidence of him being a negative draw now.
I think he has helped, but it just has been long enough, and it was a long time where he didn't do anything. So
exactly. That's the main problem with him. Definite. No. Again, all of these guys, I feel the same about Moxley. Like, even if there's cases for them, I don't want to vote for them right now. Outside of maybe this individual whose career may be over, the Chick Magnet. He's on the ballot once again, and boy, what a difference a year makes that we've been along. Did you vote for him last year, and will you vote for him again this year?
Okay, let me clarify a few things. First of all, CM Punk is a big bitch. But I voted for him, and I didn't vote for him this last year, but I just did it because I think at the end of the day, he's a Hall of Famer.
Chaotic voting from Mr. Detrolio here.
Well, look, I'm not here to vote for people because I like them.
That's true. There's no part in the Hall of Fame where it says you must like this person to vote for them. So despite him being a bitch, you voted for him for the Hall of Fame. And you voted for him in the Hall of Fame this year, but you didn't last year?
Yeah, I was more angry last year.
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess it was fresher.
Yeah, it was fresher, and I've calmed down.
About him attacking, like almost attacking Tony Khan? He actually got fired this year, which he didn't last year at the time.
I know. But it was like, I think it was more like we were waiting for this to happen.
I think we all predicted something like this would happen.
So it sort of softened the blow than his insanity last year. And of course, we saw the press conference too.
That's true. That's a great point. I always bring that up. Like, when people bring that up, like people at the NFL that do stuff behind closed doors and get locked off, but then somebody else was on camera and they get a significant.
Yeah, harder. They're in a fight or something, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, if it's on camera, that makes it a million times worse. So that's a fair point, honestly. But I'm shocked by that, to be honest with you. I thought if you had voted for him last year, I could buy it. But you have really thrown a curveball at me here.
Look, the more I think about it is like, okay, so he absolutely moved business for AEW, even if it was a short time, all-time promo. And, you know, historical significance, he changed sort of what WWE was willing to push in terms of his top star. And, of course, he was a big star in WWE and everything like that and had influence on the indies. So I think it is a Hall of Fame career.
Let me ask you this. What do you think of the argument? Because I've heard other people say this. What do you think of the fact that his AEW run is a negative towards him due to the fact that pretty much directly because of him, some would argue, I'm not saying yes or no, I'm just saying what I'm bringing out here for you to answer.
Yeah.
Because of him, the company is in much worse position than when he actually came into AEW.
I think there's a little bit of merit, but I guess it's the question of like, what does it take in terms of negative impact on business for a single wrestler to do before you turn on them? Because there's a few people on this list that you can say,
true,
you know, ended up fucking up business over time, right? Like a certain British wrestler.
Yes, we will talk about him.
So I don't completely hold that against him. And the fact of the matter is there's clearly problems going on in AEW from booking decisions that don't have anything to do with CM Punk.
Even I have to agree with that.
Punk did not make Jimmy Jacobs like Tony Khan's hand man.
Right, that was the big mistake that we made.
Some of the other people, Pat Buck and Sanjay Dutt, they're all like Fed pilled and TNA pilled.
Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he actually has creative power, but
I guess everyone just wants to see him wrestle.
Yeah.
He got 41% last year. Do you think he gets in? That he will improve at least by one vote. You've confirmed for
I don't know. I think it's going to be divisive again. I could see him going up. It's hard to say.
I don't think he gets in, but it wouldn't completely surprise me. I mean, look at last year with Ibushi.
Yep. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Like his, say what you want about him, good or bad, his name has been on the top of everyone's tongue for this entire year, pretty much, with him barely even having wrestled during this time. Like, it's crazy how that
works. Oh, and his short run back in AEW was really nothing.
Yeah, I didn't really like that, his work there that much. I thought his promos were actually really strong. The in-ring was not as impressive. I thought his original run at AEW, he did a lot of great work. Him versus MJF is still some of the best stuff that they've done as a company.
Yeah. And the promos with Kingston?
I just wish that had lasted longer because they had a 2-week feud and it was awesome.
But I think some of his creative decisions when he came back, because people are like, okay, well, Punk wanted to have Collision to have like an old school wrestling feel. I get it. Okay, and that's great considering the direction that AEW is going. But when it came to Punk himself, I hate the Real World Champion shtick.
Oh, that sucked. Yeah.
And I think him trying to be like, oh, we're the Colliders and you Dynamiters and stuff. Trying to turn the fan base on each other is, I think, also a stupid thing.
Yeah, that didn't work objectively. So we'll see. We'll see how his vote goes. But suffice to say, no, in my book, I would not vote for him. What about Seth Rollins? He also gets CM Punk.
One of the most overrated wrestlers.
Yeah.
Because he's seen as the work rate guy in WWE.
No.
Right? He's there, but that's the example that's used. And
yeah, he is.
He also floundered on top when he got that big win over Brock at Mania and 2019, and it's not there.
To the point they had to turn him into a preacher.
Yep. And oh yeah, and the whole freaking stuff is so off-putting.
I hate his character so much.
Yeah. So yeah, no. I think that's an easy no.
Yeah, I mean his whole career, I mean the one thing I will say about him is that he does have longevity. he's been a guy since 2007, like in Ring of Honor since then.
Yeah.
And he's had some great matches. Like, there's no doubt
about it. He's almost a main eventer a decade now.
Yeah, he's...
like, honestly, I didn't mind The Architect. It wasn't bad.
Yeah, that was okay. Like, I didn't think that run was great shakes, personally, especially from a promo sense.
Yeah.
But it's way better than what he's doing now, which is, like you said, completely off-putting and awful. He's done all right. I mean, I don't know if you saw his latest match, the one with Drew.
I have not, no.
Yeah, I talked about it on Wrestle Update. It was a good match. I had it 3 3/4.
Well, was that because of Drew or because
of... Right, because of Drew, yes. And that was probably the best match that Seth has had in his run. All of his matches with Nakamura and Finn were not great or special in any way. He had a match with Priest on Raw, which I thought was good. Again, like, we're talking 3 3/4 range, like nowhere close to matches of the year. That's about where he tops out for me in general. No influence or drawing thing that I would say is Hall of Fame.
He's wrestlers. That's about it.
He's pushed a lot, like in WWE. That is his claim to fame. And you know, Rollins. It's going to be interesting to see. Now, it's an interesting tidbit for promotional purposes. I think if I were Dave Meltzer running this is the first year we will see all three of the Shield on the ballot at the same time.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So we're gonna see how they all match up to each other.
I mean, I'm thinking Roman will eventually get it unless there's a total. He has a total meltdown of.
Yeah, something like, truly crazy happens.
And destroys the business, but I think Rollins will be the one that'll struggle to get in.
Yeah, I agree with that. Going in there, Roman last year he had 31%, so he's still a ways away.
He's gonna go up, though, I think.
I agree. I agree with that overall. What about Randy Orton? Speaking of people who are pushed a lot in WWE.
No.
Yeah, like easy no in my
book. Easy no. I mean, I think there's a lot of wrestlers that do like him, though, so it's always you never know what's going to happen.
He had 32% last year, which is 1% more than Roman.
So, but he's been injured. He's apparently coming back in Survivor Series. But, I mean, was never a big business mover. I mean, the most historical significance you can give to him are the RKO memes, and that's about it.
Yeah, exactly. I never was a fan of his work, to be honest with you. I always thought he was such... Listen, I get why wrestlers like him. He really seems like a clean-cut type of worker, like easy to work with, very smooth.
Yeah.
But there's nothing special or exciting about him at all.
No.
I would say like a total robotic character, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. And he has had big clunkers like that match against Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania.
Which is one of the worst matches of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a lot of clunkers in him too.
What about Edge?
No.
He had 33%. So he's 1% above Orton last year.
I mean, I think he's a nice little worker, but I think people overrate his like work. I think he was somewhat of a draw like in the mid 2000s to like early 2010s. But I mean, he simply hasn't been a draw at all since he returned.
Negative run.
Has he had any good matches, really?
Yeah, negative run since he's returned.
Yeah.
I see nothing in him that makes me.
Put Christian on the ballot, please.
That would be fun. I think Christian's a better performer than he is, although he suffers from the same thing that we mentioned earlier with Ishii. He really didn't get the run until it was like kind of past it. Like Edge got the run 5 years earlier than Christian did.
Yeah.
And Christian's run was on SmackDown when it was like on Sci-Fi. It was like the lowest point of SmackDown.
People will vote for Christian's run right now, I bet.
Well, he's awesome right now. One of the best at the moment. We'll see what he could do in AEW. I think that's something worth watching. So far, I haven't been convinced of anything.
I'm not sure I would vote for Christian, but I think he might be a better in a year from now. He might be a better candidate than Edge.
He's worth a look. Like overall, I agree. I agree with that completely. Who do we have left? What about Becky Lynch?
No. And you know, the best case for Becky Lynch. I did not vote for Becky Lynch. I could see myself voting for Becky Lynch at some point. The best case I've seen made by for Becky Lynch is by Ethan Tyler. He did some audio for Voice of Wrestling, and he does research for Dave about like business in the UK. And his point was Becky, no, like, she was like the biggest star, even if it was like for 6 months in the business. And no woman has done that in like 70 years in North America.
He said that.
So, I mean, I'm not moved by that quite totally, just because I just think there needs to be a little more longevity involved. But I think, you know, and then I think when Becky won the title, there was that whole horrible feud with her and Seth versus like Baron Corbin, Evans. And look, I'm going to be honest with you. I think for a lot of it, she hasn't been that great of a worker. She's been carried. Like, I really liked her matches against Bianca, but that's Bianca carrying her, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen a lot of WWE this year. People seem to be higher on her work this year. She seems to be building herself back up. So I think in a few years' time, she could be a strong candidate, but I just can't pull the trigger right now for Becky Lynch.
It's tough for me to really praise her that much when it's clear to me, especially around the time period where she main evented, without Ronda, she's not in the main event. Like, that, there's just no way. So I can't give Becky credit.
I don't think it just would have been Becky versus Charlotte.
No, I can't give Becky credit when Ronda is the reason that match is the main event. Mm-hmm. Now, and when she was the champion, like you said, yes, Seth flopped, but also Becky was a top star around that time as well. It did not move anything, like any ratings or anything like that. Kofi as well at that same WrestleMania.
All flopped. All the new champions flopped coming out of that Mania.
Yeah, and they had to drastically redesign two of them. Kofi just went back to mid-card. Kofi. Becky as heel, big-time Bex, was a poor run, I think,
From all accounts, she wanted to turn heel, but the fans did not.
It was a bad idea, though, even if it was hers overall. They're right. I've actually really liked her feud this year with the next person we'll talk about, which is Trish Stratus. I thought they had some great matches. I thought they were bringing like a Tom and Julia sensibility to WWE for a little while, where people were getting bruised, scars were happened. Becky's nose got broken in one match. They had some really hard hitting and great matches. They had some good promos too. Becky had 20% last year. Trish had 11, so she's really on the cut line here. What's your thought on your fellow Canadian?
I mean, I can't do it. I mean, I think she's one of the weakest candidates on this whole list. I mean, I don't like, okay, so she got one main event of Raw back in the day against Lita.
Yeah, exactly. That's it's not her fault. It's just
not her fault.
Yeah.
But it's just,
it's still true, though.
Yeah, it's just I don't know. There's just not enough there. I mean, I guess you could say she's added to her case, and I think maybe I could see her going up, not dramatically, but a couple percent, enough to save her.
I've been a huge fan of her heel work this year. I thought she did a lot to help elevate Zoe Stark as well. And those are some of Becky's best matches I've seen in years, to be honest with you. So I personally am a big fan. I don't know how much it took with the average WWE fan, let alone the Hall of Fame voter. But the fact of the matter is, I just don't see a lot there. When you look at the entirety of her career, it's going to be interesting because we haven't seen a woman go in since 2006 to this Hall of Fame. And I think that'll be broken this year with Beauty Pair. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if any of the other like singles candidates would be there. But I think Becky, even though she also had a low vote last year, I think Becky has a much greater odds than she does.
I think Becky will get in eventually.
I do too, and I think Sasha will get it. I think she has a better case or candidacy than these.
I think Sasha's going to have to add a little more to her resume.
Yeah,
but I think she can. Don't get me wrong. I would never vote for Charlotte Flair.
No, I'm not a fan.
I would vote for Becky, and I would vote for Sasha. I could see myself doing that.
I wouldn't right now, but I could see.
Yeah, I wouldn't right now, but I could see myself voting for both of them.
Would you vote for Goldberg?
I did vote for Goldberg. I think if you add it all together.
And you made the correct choice, by the way. Goldberg is definitely a Hall of Famer in my book.
Look, you can. There's a lot of critiques to be made about his original run. Like, it cooled off, yada, yada. His first bit of WWE run did draw, although it eventually did flop. But his return against stuff against Lesnar that definitely moved business at a time when WWE was getting really soft and their ratings were dropping faster than people were cutting the cord on cable. So I think, I'm not saying he blows past into the Hall of Fame, but I think I think there's enough there to put him in.
His match versus Lesnar at Mania was awesome. Like, it was a 6-minute match.
Yeah.
But it was something totally different than you would see anywhere else. Totally badass stuff. Great intensity, like high speed action as well as power, all mixed in one. I love those matches a lot. Goldberg is freaking awesome, and I will not listen. I think he's actually really underrated historically as a worker. Even the match everyone points to prove he sucks, and this actually like went around not that long ago, maybe a couple weeks ago. The match he had with Regal, that was a cool ass match. Like, look at what he's doing in there. Like, he was actually showing technical skills you didn't get to see. He was going along. It was a good match. But that historically, that's what everyone points to. Like, Goldberg got exposed. He sucks. No, he didn't. He was good in that match. You look at the stuff at WCW, the intensity that he had in all of his squashes made himself special in a way really nobody ever has, like, to the extent that he has.
Yeah.
He had great matches with DDP, everyone points to. WWE, when he came back, the Elimination Chamber performance was freaking amazing. He was great in that. Obviously, the Triple H feud just sucked. And everything afterwards.
And him against The Rock.
It had a great debut.
Yeah.
But once they put the wig on him, I think that really did a lot of damage, to be honest. But then he came back. Suddenly, he cut great promos. He was doing good work. His match with Drew was pretty good as well. It wasn't great, but still, Goldberg, and the fact of the matter is this, just like Beauty Pair, you can't tell the history of American wrestling without Goldberg.
No.
Like you're missing a chapter if you don't talk about him. He's a Hall of Famer. For sure, I would vote yes for him in there, even though his run was short, but still. Mm. Last one that we have here, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff.
I voted for him last year, and I'm voting for him again this year. I mean, no question. Drew against Lawler, Drew against Flair in the NWA, and was probably Hogan's biggest drawing opponent. The reality is, like, people think about Hogan's iconic opponents, but what they get wrong is they base it off of pay-per-view and not house show business. And so, like, people think King Kong Bundy was a much bigger deal than he was because he was in Mania 2 against Hogan. But, like, Hogan's two of Hogan's biggest draws that he never had. Well, I mean, he had the big event in Toronto, but that was on pay-per-view, which one of the biggest crowds of all time. But it's like Kamala and Orndorff were, like, two of Hogan's biggest drawing opponents. And it was, like, mostly house shows and everything like that, or, like, a Saturday night's main event blow-off. And just the insane business that they were doing for Hogan and Orndorff, and then plus his other previous runs against Flair and Lawler, draw everywhere he went, even if he wasn't the top guy, he should be in there. And a pretty good worker for, like, the, if you sort of think about what the 80s was.
To me, he's a no-brainer. You can't look at his track record and disparage it, really. One of the top draws as a heel of the 80s and one of Hogan's best opponents. And I do agree with you. I thought he was a good worker, too. He's a guy that I think historically has been slighted a bit, maybe because of the reason you said that people looked at pay-per-view more than what they should.
Especially if he didn't live through it.
Yeah. And that's another thing. This is why it hurts. This is a thing I wish they would change about the Hall of Fame. Why are we judging Paul Orndorff against CM Punk? Like, that doesn't compute to me.
It's the 30-year rule, and he was wrestling till 95.
Yeah. I just don't think it's an accurate way, and I think it's going to hurt him in this vote overall. But he did get 50% last year.
Here's the thing. He got a death bump, but also what that caused was more people started looking into his record and were like, oh, wow, this guy was a huge draw.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. Do you think he'll make the jump to historical?
He's got... till 95, so 2025, I think, is when he makes the jump to historic.
Yeah, because JYD did it this year. But wrapping up the U.S., who'd you vote for here?
U.S. Yeah. Bucks, Moxley, Orndorff, Goldberg, and Punk.
Okay, I think I'd pull the trigger on the Bucks, Briscoes, Orndorff, and Goldberg. And I feel kind of icky voting for the Bucks because they're still kind of active. But I think you can't – their influence is so strong that I don't think you could tell the story of wrestling without them, for better or worse.
Well, the 21st century, definitely.
Yeah. But that counts, even though historical is what everyone looks at. But I still do count it. And the other ones we'll see about. Not CM Punk, though. I'm just kidding. But we'll see there. Okay, we're going to speed round these next two categories because we talked about them last year. We're just going to get through these because there's a lot of people in the historical region. To be honest. Okay, so we're going to go through this lineup here. We'll briefly talk about them. Von Erichs, Kevin Kerry, David, will you vote for him? Do you think they'll get a bump because of the movie?
The movie's been getting bad reviews, and I know someone that went to the premiere because he works in the media. And so if you're a wrestling fan, you might not like it because of certain creative liberties they take. Chris is not even in the movie.
I'd heard something like David's bigger than Carrie or something in it, the way they shoot it.
So I voted for the Von Erichs for the same reason as you can't tell the story of American wrestling without the Von Erichs. And you need to have more than Fritz in there. And I don't think any of them you could put on their own, but you can't sort of tell the story without them.
They tried it with Carrie for a long time, but he never got over the hump.
But I think they should be in. It's the Von Erichs, you know?
My only issue, because I totally agree with you, the only reason I wouldn't vote for them is, why is it these three? What do we have linking these particular three together rather than just the whole Von Erich family? If it was the whole Von Erich family, I think they would for sure get in. But I think this is going to cause them to...
This was technically the most significant trio because Mike and Chris didn't do anything.
Yeah, you're right. It'll be interesting, their vote as a family. I think if they just listed Von Erich family, they'd be dead set locks to get in. With these three on their own, we'll see. But I mean, everything you said is true, to be honest. What about the Von Brauners?
I don't think people are going to vote in a Nazi gimmick in 2023. But they were probably a very historically huge tag team, so we don't have any tape of them.
Yeah, that's going to hurt them in general. They had 10% last year, so they're right on that cut line right now. Mad Dog and Butcher of Vajon.
I voted for them last year, and I didn't vote for them this year, but they did quite a bit big business in the AWA, and I really do think that they were probably a Hall of Fame tag team, but they're sort of on that line for me. But I would strongly recommend looking into them.
13% last year. On the cut line. Anytime you have guys here, and we can talk about it the next one, Johnny Rougeau, where did you put him at?
I voted for him, and I voted for him last year. I think
he should be in.
The number three drawing, number three draw in Montreal historically. The language barrier, I think, is a factor in looking into it. But there's a lot of stuff out there by Pat LaPrade about just how many 10,000 plus shows that he headlined.
I was just about to bring up Pat. Anytime you need research for the Canadians, big wrestlers, even the Vachons, check his work out because he's a fantastic guy. He knows what he's talking about. He's a very good guy. But Rougeau, if you really look at his record, he's a Hall of Fame. There's no reason he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame at all. He has to be voted in my opinion. The Vachons, I mean, they had a low rating last year with 13%. Where did Rougeau end? I have the list of everybody here right now.
There's a lot of vocal Rougeau voters, and I think it's possible that he can pick up momentum.
Yeah, and last year the Von Erichs did have 33% of the votes as well. I forgot to mention him. Rougeau at 41%, so he's tied with CM Punk.
He's gaining momentum.
Good. He deserves it, in my opinion. What about Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Jay Youngblood as a tag team?
I have not voted for them either this year or last year, but I've given them very serious consideration. They were a really
amazing
great
team,
and they have a bit of a draw, and not just in the Carolinas when they did the big thing with Slaughter and Carnoodle, and they worked in All Japan and stuff. So I'm pretty close. I just keep dropping them. They're one of my last cuts.
They just don't have as much time as some of these other ones on there together. but at their work and everything about them is awesome. They're one of my favorite teams of all time. I think Youngblood is a very historically underrated performer. Mm-hmm. They're right on the edge for me. Well, I think they should. Like, I have 10 people who I would for sure vote for, or 10 acts, I guess you could say, that I would for sure vote for in this region. You need 8. If they weren't in, they'd be my last cut. Like, let me put it that way. I absolutely love them and think they are by far a Hall of Fame team. But speaking of by far, like, to me, possibly the best candidate in this whole region, Argentina Roca and Miguel Perez.
Yep, I voted for them, and just one of the greatest drawing tag teams of all time in the Northeast and everything like that. Just no question at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Slam dunk. Can't believe they didn't get in, even though they were right on the line of getting in. And I think there's a good chance they could get in. 57% last year. We'll see. We'll see how this affects things. What about Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch? Murdoch better on his own.
Murdoch could never get in, and he was seen as one of those guys that are like, are you better than Dick Murdoch or are you not? Because if you're better, you're in, and you're not, you shouldn't be in type thing, right? Him and Terry Gordy were the sort of those guys on the line and everything like that. I have not voted for them. I gave them some look. I just don't think it all adds up. But they were a pretty successful team at one point.
Like I said, Murdoch is better as a singles, and he wasn't able to get in. I can't see this being a vote. What about the Hart Foundation? Bret Hart and Jim Neidhart?
No. Bret's there. Jim Neidhart is not a Hall of Famer, and I just don't think they alone have what it takes to be a Hall of Fame tag team in terms of drawing what. Okay, so they drew some matches in Canada against the Bulldogs on WWF house shows, but that's about it. Again, it's an 80s bias in effect.
Oh, okay. Well, what about that 80s bias for the British Bulldogs?
Yeah, the Bulldogs actually have historical significance in terms of just their style and everything like that, and kid. And Davey Boy Smith, I think, was a pretty darn good worker before the he took too many roids. And I think he might actually have a better case on his own because he was a huge draw in Europe. So I think that should also be taken into consideration.
Yeah, I agree with that.
For them.
You still wouldn't vote for the Bulldogs?
No. I've thought about it, but it's just, I don't know.
They're better than the Hart Foundation.
Oh, for sure, absolutely.
Yeah, in my opinion. What about the other Briscoe? So the other candidacy, Jack and Jerry.
I have given some thought to this. Again, I think about it. I could see myself voting for them in the future. I mean, everyone that goes back and watches the Briscoe stuff, from what I've heard, and I haven't gone and back and watched a lot of it, but I know people that have in the past couple of years since they've been on the bout, and they all rave about it.
Yeah, they were great. I've seen their matches.
I think that there's probably have to take a deeper look, but I know a lot of people that I respect vote for them and just rave about their work.
Yeah, they're right. They're another of those candidates that are right there. Yeah. You know, I wouldn't argue with anybody that would vote for them. They don't necessarily jump off as a top tier candidate the way Rocca and Perez do, but I think they're a worthy vote for sure. Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson with J.J. Dillon.
Well, this is the problem with J.J. Dillon. Does that mean you can't count the WWF run as the Brainbusters? Like, this is what confuses people about the way that Dave does this.
Okay. I didn't think about it like that, but okay.
So this is, I mean, they're a great tag team, great workers, but it's not a Hall of Fame tag team.
They weren't even around, like, their actual tag.
It's very short, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, their tag run, if you put with J.J. Dillon, it's even a shorter tag run.
Yeah, I just don't buy them together as a Hall of Fame team. I mean, they're a great working team. Some really good matches up and down. And like I said, a lot of their best stuff was in WWF, which I guess by this J.J. Dillon rule, I guess you could not count, I guess. But there's 8 better candidates than them on this side of the bracket. What about Black Gordman and Great Goliath?
Okay, so I have to do more research on them, but I think they have a bit of a drawing case and sort of a certain level of being successful in the States, like Mexican wrestlers being successful in the States. But they're like one of my weakest candidates that I know, like in terms of knowledge.
I'd be shocked if they get in just for that reason. They're not really talked about it at all. But if you look into them, they were a really big deal at the time. Mexicans crossing over into Texas. They held the tag titles 20 times or something. They had the world tag titles, which they didn't have that many times. But they also had the Americas tag titles, which was a big deal. That was practically their titles pretty much. And a lot of Mexicans held that as well. But they wrestled in Mexico, but also Texas a lot as well. Even the Hollywood sector they wrestled in, obviously had big over in California as much as Texas. Anywhere you had a good Mexican population, they were very over in, but they're not talked about that much. I can't see them getting in, and I wouldn't vote for them. I even have a lot to learn about them as well. But still, if you look at them and track them down, they do have a case for them being their popularity in Texas and California. Moving on to the singles wrestlers, what are your favorites? You wrote an article about him last year, Tigerjeet Singh.
Oh, a slam dunk. I don't care if you think he's the worst wrestler of all time, and there's a very strong case that he is in terms of ability. No question. Probably might be the worst worker on this list even. But his drawing ability and his historical significance are just so huge in Japan that – and he drew a bit in Canada, too, in Toronto. So
yeah, he's from Canada.
Yeah, he's got a school named after him.
Yeah.
In a Toronto suburb and everything, because he's a philanthropist now.
Did you go to the school?
I did not, no.
Oh, I just wanted to double check, see any bias.
But he's just such a huge star that he should be in. But people are obviously turned off by the work. But I don't know. Everything else is so strong. He's got to be in.
Do you consider him influential or historical?
I mean, he was there in the early 70s with Abby and sort of pioneered that.
Yeah.
Heel
the monster foreigner. Yeah.
You know, I mean, look, it's funny because I've been going and watching some more Abby and Sheik stuff in All Japan. And I'm like, oh, my. Whatever you may think of them, they are miles better than Singh.
Agreed. That's the thing. It's going to depend on how much you value drawing power versus work rate.
I would argue he's got Hall of Fame level in two out of the three.
Yeah, potentially. We'll see if the voters feel that way as well. I think he's a valid case. Everything you said in your article was very good. Still up if you guys want to read it. A lot of good influence there from you, Gerard Detrolio, on his case. I would say it's worth reading. What about the Iron Sheik?
He's one of the worst. He's actually one of the worst candidates on here. He wouldn't even be on this list if he wasn't the transitional champ for Hogan between Backlund and Hogan. If you sort of take that out and he has the exact same career, including the matches against Slaughter, which are great matches, and then the Iraqi run in as Colonel Mustafa. That's not enough to be in the Hall of Fame. I will say he's sort of underrated as a worker because everyone thinks of him after 1985.
Yeah.
But you got to watch his stuff against Slaughter. And when he was younger, he was a suplex machine. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, agreed. Him and Slaughter had some great matches. I guess I could bring us over to Slaughter. What do you think of him?
I mean, he was one of the best workers in the early 80s, no question. Sort of was one of the big bumping big men, was a huge star, was a draw. You could debate how long it was, but I mean, I'm sorry, but the G.I. Joe thing counts. Also, because of his popularity through G.I. Joe, he got AWA that ESPN deal. He's the only wrestler that any of the AWA wrestler that any of the ESPN executives recognized.
He's right.
They did not recognize Greg Gagne.
Oh, shots fired at Greg. It was a good worker.
Quick aside, I've been watching a lot of old AWA lately. I have a hot take.
Okay.
Bockwinkle better than Flair.
I agree. I agree with that. And Flair is the guy everyone points to, in the 80s and 90s. But if you look at their run, Bockwinkel's character was so much more three-dimensional than Flair's.
Yes.
And he had a lot better
think Bockwinkel was way better. Well, I'm not saying Flair was bad at these things, but I think Bockwinkel was on another level and so those little things in the ring.
I think Flair had his routine match. A lot of his matches were all kind of the same. And it led to great things at different points, but Bockwinkel was much more versatile as a worker.
Absolutely.
So I agree with that take. Slaughter, to me, should be in. Like, it's kind of weird he's not in, to be honest. Anyway, we will see if that
I think people hold the Iraqi thing against him. I really do.
And that was a terrible run.
Because, let's be honest.
I thought it was legit.
There's an 80s, 90s bias, I think, in a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
That's why the Iron Sheik is on this ballot. Yeah. But I think it's also sort of holding Slaughter back. And I don't hold that against him. I just don't.
He was at 57 last year.
Yeah.
Him and Rocca and Perez were the highest percentages that didn't make it. So I think he could get in, to be honest with you, this year. And I think he should. Who's next? Oh, of course. My Memphian friend, Sputnik Monroe.
I give consideration to Sputnik. I just haven't voted for him, but obviously, like, hugely historical significance. Although my question is, and I would be more apt to vote for him. This is like, did his desegregating Memphis lead to like more desegregation of crowds in Tennessee or elsewhere in the South?
I don't have numbers in front of me that prove that, but I would suspect it definitely had an influence. I would suspect it would. All I can tell you is when I was in sixth grade, my sixth grade teacher, who was a black woman, for the record, she talked to me because she knew how much I liked wrestling. She told me about this guy. She used to sneak out and go to the bars because he would go to the black bars at the time of the segregation. Yeah. And this is a firsthand account. I'm telling you guys this now. So to that point, that was probably 40 years after, 30 to 40 years after the fact that it happened. She still remembered that.
Mm.
So that tells me that he was very important at the time.
And that's historical significance because people remember that.
Yes, the ones who were there. I mean, again, we're getting further and further away, which is going to hurt like any kind of historical candidate's vote for the most part. But he was important to at least the Memphis area for sure and desegregating it. I think that has to count for something. And again,
absolutely,
we can't say for sure because, again, it was so long ago. And it's not like we've seen a million of his matches that we could just go look for that easily. But for historical significance, I think he passes the smell test for me, and he'd be a guy. Again, I'm not saying I'd for sure put him in my top eight, but I think he should be in for that. Because I think desegregating wrestling is a big part of – like, that's a huge part of the American wrestling history.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same reason I think Junkyard Dog should be in a lot of ways, too, to have a black main eventer at that level. I think that has to mean something overall. What do you think?
I agree. Well, let's just go to JYD then.
Yeah, exactly.
I do vote for Junkyard Dog, and I did last year, and I do again. And for exactly the reasons you put, but I think his drawing power is in some ways a little underrated in terms of, I like to point out, beyond New Orleans and the Superdome, he was a huge draw against Bockwinkel in Houston and other times in Houston, but people point to the Bockwinkel stuff. And also, his feud against Terry Funk was like drawing 5,000 to 7,000 people on like those WWF B shows.
Yeah.
So he was a little bit of a draw even early on in his WWF run, even if people sort of look back on that poorly, he was still a draw there. Obviously, you know, his own personal demons catching up and everything like that. But I think he marks it for historical significance in business.
Agreed. I think he's a Hall of Famer. Do you think Dave not liking him at the time and all those issues where he was negative on him, do you think that influences some of these old-timey voters any?
No, because I don't think it – or if it does, it's not to any significant extent, to be completely honest with you.
I agree.
Especially like, if you look at the way that some of Dave's current darlings can't get in either.
Hey, that's a good point as well.
Edge.
yeah, that's...
And stuff like that. And what I think people hold against him, number one, is the sort of time.
Yeah. And he was not known for having like.
But it wasn't. It was like five, 6 years.
And again, he was not held as a great worker by Meltzer and a lot of people.
No. Yeah.
You know, but I think he should be a Hall of Famer. I agree with you, though, that Meltzer in particular isn't necessarily that big of a factor.
Especially because the wrestlers will not listen to Dave.
I agree. Yeah, you're right. You're right about that.
It's the journalists and the historians that might be more likely to be influenced by Dave.
Good point. I agree with that for sure. Yeah. Bullet Bob Armstrong.
I know his significance in the South. I just don't think it still adds up to what even say like a Lawler was or something like that. So I don't know. I just don't vote for him, and I don't see myself ever voting for him.
I agree. I just don't think the totality of it's there. I like. Are people trying to add up his influence by his son's wrestling? I don't know. On that end,
that could be there because yeah, the Armstrongs have been yeah. I mean, that's got to be part of it.
Yeah, but I'm not buying him. He had 14% last year, which he took a little bit of a drop from the year prior to that. He was over 20% 2 years ago, a drop to 14. So we'll see what happens this year. Some really old school candidates. Pampero Firpo. You wrote an article about him too last year.
I did.
Was you didn't write it?
I don't think I wrote it. I voted for him last year because I don't know if I would vote for him again, but I just feel like his length of time and he had his influence was like fairly significant. It might have been one of my weakest choices to vote, but there's something definitely there with him in terms of longevity, in terms of some of the business he did and his influence.
I think me and you might have just talked about you voting for him. Yeah.
Yeah.
You should have written an article about him, though. But yeah, so you don't think you'll vote for him this year?
No, I didn't.
Him and Wild Bill Curry are kind of very similar candidates. Well,
I voted for Curry because Curry's historical significance is huge.
Yeah, exactly. Like he should be. I would vote for him for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. I mean, you don't have hardcore wrestling without him.
Exactly.
Like, whether that's a good thing or bad is up to your interpretation.
That's true. Like ban him from the Hall of Fame.
But he was hugely influential.
Yeah, these guys are hardcore guys first and foremost. But Curry, to me, I think is a stronger candidate of him and Firpo. I would vote for him. What about Cowboy Bob Ellis?
I don't know that much about Ellis. He's like I think he might be the oldest living wrestler. He's like 94. Still alive. Some people swear by him. I just don't know enough, in all honesty. But I feel like I don't know. He was definitely more regionalized, obviously, in like the South and in Texas and everything like that, as opposed to like some of the other bigger stars of the time. You know, your Thezes and those sort of guys that would have been his contemporaries.
What do you think of Dave listing people with all three of their names? Wild Bull Curry, Cowboy Bob Ellis. He can't just be Bob Ellis. He has to be Cowboy.
Well, that's how they went by. So,
okay, as an aesthetic choice, that's something we need to look at. Ellis, though, he had a lot of great stuff to look into, actually. Like, if you look at his numbers in the past, we have to get some of these historians on here. I had a lot of the stats lined up. Right now it's not loading. But regardless, he did have a lot of good to him. So Bob Ellis is definitely somebody to look for, somebody worth taking a look at least next year. Curry had 20% last year in there. Ellis had 13%, and Firpo had 10. So they're all kind of on the line right now. I wonder how that's going to change going forward. What about June Byers?
I voted for June Byers. I think she's no. Oh my goodness, my name is drawing a blank. Why am I drawing a blank?
Mildred Burke?
No, yes, Mildred Burke. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
she was the. Well, I mean, she sort of. Followed Mildred Burke.
For some reason, I wanted to say Penny Banner at first. Yeah. But
she followed Mildred Burke as like the top women's star, I think, in the 50s. Now, she wasn't as big as Burke, but she has some very strong drawing records to her name. I think she should be in for women's wrestling because, I mean, the way that women – because the Fabulous Moolah, apart from being a horrible person, really fucked up how people think about the history of women's wrestling. Because if you just look at her career, don't even think about what she did out of the ring. She's not a Hall of Famer. She's only has a name because of she was there in 1984 and 85 in WWF. And she did have a very long run as the NWA Women's world champion, no question. But she didn't really do anything, and she stunted the growth of women's wrestling. June Byers was the last real star of women's wrestling. Has a good drawing record. I think she should be in North America, I should say. So I do think she should be in.
Absolutely. I think Byers is definitely worthy of being in. It was such a long time ago. I wonder again. I always kind of worry about some of these older candidates that you know, you're pushing 70, 80 years on. But yeah, she was well regarded along with Burke as well in the ring. But it was such a different time. It's hard to tell in terms of in-ring value, but historical significance and drawing power too. Like they were a big part of that as well. Like an underrated part was women's wrestling at the time. I think that she deserves a look. I would vote for her. She'd be my top eight, like a lock, almost for sure.
I voted for her last year, and I'm going to keep voting for her as long as she's on the ballot.
Mongolian Stomper, Archie Goldberg.
So there's a little strong record there that people point to. I just don't. I haven't seen anything that's to suggest that it's enough for him to be a Hall of Famer.
That's the he's kind of an underrated candidate in general. But would I put him in the top eight in this big bracket? That's a lot harder to call. I think if some guys get in or drop off, we may be able to revisit him better. But I wouldn't put him above the top eight here.
No.
And finally, the asshole who nobody liked, Ole Anderson.
Well, yeah, there's no point in discussing him because he'll never get in because the rest are not going to vote for him.
But like, honestly, he may have been a jerk, but that dude can cut a promo. Like, you know.
And I think some people also point out, like, his successful booking wasn't even that long. It was really like in Georgia Championship Wrestling from the like 81 to 80 or 80 to 83, 81 to 84, when the sort of the Briscoes sold the company to McMahon behind his back.
That is a factual statement that you just laid out there. Overall, in historical category, who's your eight that you pick here? You just voted for none of them.
June Byers, Wild Bull Curry, Argentina Rock and Miguel Perez, Johnny Rougeau, Junkyard Dog, Tiger G Singh, Sergeant Slaughter, and the Kevin Carey and David Von Erich.
I really don't disagree with any of those, to be honest with you. I think those are all fair picks. I would probably take a second look at Cowboy Bob Ellis and Sputnik. But other than that, I really can't say for sure that the two you picked at the end wouldn't be above them as well. So six of the eight we would agree on. I think it's a good ballot overall. I think this is a tough ballot to go into because all of them, again, it's just such a hard way to look at them as well. So it's going to be interesting. Speed round, non-wrestlers. We talked about all these guys last year as well.
Is anyone new on that list?
I don't think there's anybody new on there. Who'd you vote for last year? First of all,
I can't even remember.
Did you vote for?
I think actually, you know what? It's probably the same thing.
Yeah. So
I got Bobby Bruns, Morris Siegel, correct, Tony Schiavone, Shinsuke Takagi, Ted Turner, and Roy Welch.
I know you wrote an article about Takagi.
Yes, I did.
Okay. All of those are good. We have Dave Brown on the ballot. I really think he's one of the best, even to the point when he was on AEW recently, he was still great on commentary there. So I love Dave Brown. I think he's one of the best ever and certainly a part of the best commentary team ever. I know a lot of people may not give him the full credit for that, but still, I think that he is one of the best ever overall in terms of like a color commentator type of player. So we have to give him his love and his roses, but I know to some people he's just regional, like a regional guy.
You know?
But it is interesting that
Lance Russell's in, so.
Yeah. It's interesting that he's lasted longer than some of the other guys that were on here as well, though. Yep. Although we do have Bob Caudle as well, who's kind of a very similar story, the weatherman who became the color commentator.
But again, a lot of people remember Caudle when he was like fourth string in WCW and wasn't giving much effort.
Yeah, that wasn't the best. Didn't he commentate the first WrestleCade or Starcade? Excuse me.
He probably would have.
Yeah. There. So he had his run. He's a good commentator. Everything I've heard of him. Just kind of dry. I think Brown had more personality, in my opinion. Bobby Bruns should like immediately be an audit. I can't believe he's not in.
Yeah, he should.
Makes no sense whatsoever. Big mistake by the voters. You want to talk about like the entire history of wrestling globally, starting in Japan,
yeah,
but then into the rest of the world that came after it, would be so different without him. It's insane. He has to be there. Bobby Davis, one of the OG managerial candidates, to me, he should be in. Mm-hmm. You know, like you again, you changed the business. I can't imagine voting for someone like Grand Wizard ahead of him. No offense to Wizard, who obviously is well remembered by a lot of people, but yeah, without Davis, you can't go past it. But also, nope. I think we also have to mention that he invested into Wendy's, as you told us last year. So that makes him an automatic no doubter.
You would not have spicy chicken without him.
The biggest influence.
Yeah, and of course, like you don't have Cornette or Heenan without him.
True. Joe Higuchi. He's another one that's up and down.
But I think it's probably going to be retired wrestlers voting for him.
And I think that's the thing. The thing with him is, and why I think I would like he would be on my short list. You see referees today,
yeah,
and how much they all suck, pretty much. And then you see him, like his greatness was in how he didn't stand out in any way. You know, he was just a straight up ref that like made the wrestlers like it, let the wrestlers do their thing. And he just was basically a neutral entity to the match. Nowadays, somebody like Red Shoes, I think, totally detracts from all of his matches. Pretty much, in my opinion, I hate him. Any referee in AEW is an automatic negative 10 for me. And I think that he, for one of the greatest, obviously Wada would be up there as among the greatest wrestlers in Japanese, or greatest referees in Japanese history. But Higuchi, for longevity, for the fact that he was so respected by the wrestlers, the fact that he had his own tribute shows after him when he retired, was still around in Noah way after he stopped refereeing as well.
UAC chairman.
I mean, a totally legitimate position, yeah. no doubt. But I think he would be up there with me. I think he's worth a look. But he had, what was his percentage last year? I think it was around like 20%, so to speak. He's still got a ways to go overall, looking at, you know, that.
Well, this is a little morbid, but
22%.
He discovered David Von Erich's body.
Oh, that's morbid.
Yeah.
But
he was the guy. That was his job, to like deal with the foreigners.
That's true. I mean, that's very important in its own right as well. I'd give him a look personally. Sanshiro Takagi, again, will you like, how much do you determine what he did to be Hall of Fame worthy? It's always going to be a question, but he did take a very small indie company to heights nobody could have imagined.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of these guys on this list have very unique cases, whether you're talking about Jim Johnson. Reggie Parks.
Yeah.
The thing is, what Takagi has done, no one else has done, well, in Japan or sort of anywhere, with what he's done with DDT and sort of the amount of power that he has amassed himself in Cyber Fight, being one of the most powerful people in professional wrestling in Japan and starting from nothing.
I agree with that. I mean, if you like his contemporary that you can look at for an indie company that kind of quote unquote became big would be PWG, and DDT blows them away in terms of success. They've kind of gone down in recent years, to be honest. I mean, they kind of got to that big peak, and they've not really even gotten close to where they were with Omega and Ibushi there as the top stars. But like you said, if by looking at it from that lens, nobody's done what he's done. That's absolutely true. At the end of the day, he only had 14% last year. So he's kind of, I think he's going to need to do, like DDT is going to have to have another growth period of some sort, I think, to really sell people on him. But I think what you said is valid though overall. And you mentioned before, I don't like this region because of this region. You're comparing a referee to a manager, to a promoter, to a commentator, to a guy who makes music. It's really hard, in my opinion. I don't think it's a very fair way to go about it. But Jim Johnston?
You know, I think at some point I will probably vote for him. I mean, if you think about it, he has like best-selling albums.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just the to me, that's a huge thing of being like a crossover and successful money making thing.
He had 42% last year on the ballot. The only other non-wrestler ahead of him was Bobby Davis at 45. So it's interesting that Jim Johnson got a lot of votes. I think he made a great impact on a lot of people's just lives and their childhoods watching wrestling through his music. Mm-hmm. With some of these other guys, whether it's Davis or Joe Higuchi or maybe one of the commentators you didn't hear unless you lived there, that you don't have a personal connection to them. But with Johnston, you totally do. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps him a lot. And really, he is the best at what he did in wrestling. There's nobody who makes music that is as good as he was at the end of the day. Larry Matisick, he's like a historian, kind of an interesting case on a Meltzer ballot because Meltzer said he wouldn't put himself in, but he did have 38% on here.
Well, I mean, Matisick was Sam Muchnick's right-hand guy for many years, and he tried to start a rival after rival promotion in St. Louis with Bruiser Brody and everything like that. I just don't think it just crosses the line.
Yeah. I like him, but I don't love him as a candidate, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Rossi, what do you think about him?
Look, I've seen people say that Rossi's like one of the worst candidates on the ballot. I vehemently disagree, but I just haven't been given a I still need to know more about what Rossi did, especially for the Crush Crowd.
That's the thing. Like, Rossi, I think saying he's the worst on the ballot is a stretch.
Yeah.
But, like, he was a part of the Crush Gals. It wasn't like he was just some hanger-on. Like, he did have some... Well,
the thing is, like, was he driving them to media events, or was he, like, formulating their whole image, right?
I think somewhere in between is the correct way to look at that. Definitely more than the first one, but probably not as much as the second one.
And, look, I mean, that this is my own biases, but that interpromotional period of, what, like, 92 to 95? I mean, that's some of the best wrestling ever.
And he was instrumental to that.
Yeah, so that's why I'm like, yeah, you know, I kind of want to vote for Rossi, actually. But
his run at the end of All Japan led to disaster, though, like before he left as well. And there's the Arcion stuff that you have to count.
Well, you know, at one point, Arcion was technically the largest women's promotion in the world.
It was. And then look what happened.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And well, Stardom, do you credit him with them being as big as they are, or is it Bushiroad that helped them over the top?
Well, I'll sort of pick that apart. You got to give Bushiroad credit. I think Kidani should be in.
Oh, I thought that was one of the most egregious failures by the voters to have him drop off. Was so stupid that I don't even understand it.
I would have, if Kidani was on last year, I definitely voted for him.
He might be the strongest candidate on this ballot, like, to me. If you look at his, without him, so much is different with New Japan, and therefore everybody we're talking about, New Japan touched in some way. Like the Young Bucks, who's to say if there's no Bullet Club? Like, who knows what, you know? Like, it's ridiculous.
Well, I forgot to think. I got to say this about the Bucks. They got shook in Hot Topic.
That's an accomplishment because they had no TV footprint when that happened.
Yeah, yeah. So that's another thing for the Bucks. But Rossi, instead of saying, okay, Stardom success, Stardom grown, okay, you have to give that to Bushiroad, no question. But if Rossi was, if you think Rossi's a great booker, which I go back and forth on.
Yeah, sometimes he seems the best.
Maybe it's not about necessarily purely the business, but do you think he's also an amazing booker? I mean, you can make that argument. I don't think Stardom has been not as good as last year booking wise.
Absolutely. If you'd asked me last year, I thought they were on a huge hot run, but that happens with a lot of companies. I mean, even New Japan, they've had their runs where everybody said they were the greatest.
But, in a few years from now, we might be able to have a good idea of like, okay, Rossi was a great booker in 90s All Japan Women. Rossi helped form the Crush Gal. Rossi was also an amazing booker in Stardom. So I could see myself definitely voting for Rossi in the future, but we'll see what he does to add to his case.
Good point. I agree with that. There's a case there, but I don't think it's fully fleshed out enough in terms of the grand scheme of things. Reggie Parks, he makes belts. He's like one of the top belt makers in history.
I don't know. I just don't have any rush to vote for him.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is like voting for the best puncher in the NFL Hall of Fame. Yeah. Or if there was like in baseball, a bunt specialist.
I think a lot of people are put off by the belt voting for Reggie Parks because of belt culture.
It's very weird.
Yeah, so I think people are like roll their eyes and like, oh, this guy made the winged eagle, but WWE fans who wear the winged eagle everywhere are like the worst people.
I don't think that rubs off on him specifically.
No, I know, but it's the aura of the belts and everything. But amazing belts. He made amazing belts, no question.
I mean, big gold belt was a great, like the WCW championship.
Yeah, yeah.
Was freaking awesome.
And he made the original GHC title, which they should never switched.
But yeah, yeah, totally agree. The original GHC was a great, great title overall. Again, I just, like, the belt is cool, like, and there's great stuff about it. I just, compared to these other guys, like, there's six people I would vote for him, like, easy on this ballot. Morris Siegel, you said that you would vote for him, which you should. I mean, he's totally should be.
Was like a promoter in Houston for 50 years.
Yeah.
What promotions? I mean, if there's a case for Cowboy Bob Ellis, then Morris Siegel's part of that because Ellis was a big star in Houston, and he was like Paul Bosch's mentor, and Paul Bosch obviously is in the Hall of Fame, and no one would question that.
And he's another one. Like, you're looking back so many years, like almost 90, like 80, 90 years at this point. When he started, same thing with Welch, you said you would vote for as well out there. But I think that kind of hurts them in the grand scheme of things overall. But if you compare him, like, look at Morris Siegel and somebody like that, you know, when you look at Don Owen, who got in a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
To me, Siegel is a much stronger candidate.
Well, I mean, it was a bigger territory. Right. Yeah.
Siegel had 37%. last year. What about Welch?
I mean, you don't get Memphis and Tennessee wrestling without him, so.
Exactly. Like, I think that's hard to overlook overall. Mm-hmm. One of the most important territories. Only at 15%. Siegel had 37%. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Schiavone, he was your commentator of choice on this ballot.
Yeah, I mean, I think AEW put him over the top. When he was great, he was great.
Yeah. What? Okay, how about this? I'm going to throw this at you. What made you pick him over Mike Tenay?
Longevity.
Yep. And I agree with your pick, by the way, but I just wanted to throw it out there.
Yeah, that was the big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, now, you could also make a case for Mike Tenay. Like, Tenay was like, had an early newsletter. He was doing newsletters before Dave was, like, the late 60s and the 70s, was introducing fans to, like, Mexican and Japanese wrestling, you know, and everything like that, too.
He's a TNA Hall of Famer.
Absolutely.
I like him, but I would pick Schiavone for the reasons you said overall. George Scott.
I don't know. I think I gave him a little more consideration this year. I was maybe a little too dismissive last year. The people are really adamant about the work he did even before he came to WWF. So I think that you sort of have to really take him seriously as one of the great bookers of all time. And you know, you can come to your decision about that, but I think you sort of have to approach it from that perspective.
True. I think that's a totally reasonable take. Ted Turner.
Oh, I can't stand the anti-Ted Turner thing.
41% last year, and I think I agree with where you're coming from, with what you're about to
say. It's just like, okay, I understand he did not do everything. I understand that WCW lost a lot of money, but it was cable that transformed the wrestling business, and he was the only person that bankrolled something that beat Vince even ever so for 83 weeks, even if it was that short.
And fought for it multiple times against
the odds. Yeah. Yeah. And just the way that cable transformed the wrestling business, it had to go with him.
I would vote for him. You cannot tell the story of American wrestling without Ted Turner, period. No. On that end. Stanley Weston, an interesting candidate here. What he
brings. So I haven't voted for him, but I think if some people go in, I will vote for him because of how important those magazines are.
Yeah.
And work. I mean, look, I don't know if he was still at PWI, but when me grabbing a copy of the 1999 PWI PWI 500 changed my life in many ways because I saw a certain Mitsuharu Misawa in a really cool picture of him giving someone a Tiger driver. And I was forever very interested in what's going on in Japan, and it all goes from there.
Yeah, I think that's a great story there. It's just, again, is that going to be enough for the voters? Like, it's tough, you know, overall.
Those magazines were pretty important for shaping things. And, like, the magazines could make stars. Like, Billy Jack Haynes, I think, was someone that probably, well, I mean, he sort of flamed out. But at one point, everyone, like, he sort of had a huge high profile because of the magazines.
Yeah.
And all of those iconic covers of dusty roads covered in blood and everything.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking
about. I think the magazines were also important in Magnum TA getting over, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong about that, but there was definitely some guys at the magazines helped get over.
And Magnum TA was freaking awesome as well. Yeah. You're a great worker. Two more left. Grand Wizard.
Look, I mean, that old WWF stuff is... like, I've watched a bunch of Backlund stuff, but it's still a blind spot for me in many ways. But there are a lot of people that will tell you he was absolutely one of the greatest referees of all time. And, managers of all time is what I meant. And that he, like, was important for getting all of those acts and drawing against Backlund sometimes. And, you know, someone did bring up, who was it? I think it might have been Mike Sempervivi. If, like... Grand Wizard, you think he died in 83? If he, like, dies in 86 or 87, he's probably in, because more people would have seen him in WWF during Hogan.
Yeah, good point. That's a totally reasonable point. He got 26% of the votes last year. I'd like to see Davis get in first, and I think I would look for him more. Because I think there's definitely a case there, but... to me, Davis is a much stronger candidate in the same. That's kind of, you have to separate these non-wrestlers because everybody has their competitors in their own category almost.
Mm-hmm.
James Melby, the last one.
He's got an award named after him at the Cauliflower Alley Club in terms of journalism. True. So I think he's sort of like the pioneer of wrestling journalism. You don't get Dave and Wade and everyone else without him, right?
I think that's fair. But there are certain people that think that wrestling journalism hurt the business, which obviously I would not subscribe to. But still.
Anderson for one.
Well, yeah.
But it doesn't matter because all of them are reading the Meg. All of them are reading.
Yeah, yes, good point there.
And like, you know, the fact of the matter is, like, I think it's sort of telling that Terry Funk and Ric Flair became very close friends with Dave. And this is when they were, like, at the peak of their careers.
Yeah. Absolutely. Terry Funk, I mean, that guy had a mind for wrestling that nobody could match.
I always love this story. When Terry first saw wrestling on cable, he called up Dory and said they needed to sell the territory. Because he knew that they could, Amarillo as a territory, could never survive with cable becoming the shift to cable.
Hey, he looked pretty smart.
He was. It was like one of the most prescient things in wrestling, because there have been many horribly wrong decisions made about long-term things. But that's a great point. Greatest. Yeah.
Who's your six overall?
Okay. Bobby Bruns, Morris Siegel, Tony Schiavone, Shinsuro Takagi, Ted Turner, and Roy Welch.
I think those are fair. We would share the same three if I was voting. I would have Siegel, Bruns, Davis, and Ted Turner all in there. The last two, rather, are, you could go in a lot of different ways because there's so many different types of people on the ballot.
Yeah.
I personally would pick Dave Brown in over Schiavone, but I do agree with you. I mean, he had a much more large footprint as well in there. I could definitely not argue with it. The sixth, there's a lot of different people you could look at. I think I might go with Welch as well, as the sixth one overall, for what you said. Man, I think about Higuchi the ref, though. That's just my fan eyes talking. Melby's an interesting case as well. Weston, too. See, that's the thing about this, is there's so many different kinds of people. Like, it's hard to latch on. So, last one. The other area, Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Pacific, and Africa. a totally unfair ballot for so many people.
You know what? I don't vote in Mexico, but I am learning more about the history of Lucha. And can I just say who I would vote for if I had a ballot?
Absolutely.
Because I can't speak on everyone on this list. But if I had a ballot, I would vote for Los Hermanos Dinamita, Darrell Dixon, and Blue Panther.
Good picks. I think Panther is a great candidate. He's literally one of my absolute favorite workers of all time. I would put him in the top 10 as well. Darrell Dixon, very, very, very influential and historically significant. One of the first black stars in Lucha Libre as well. Brought it over there.
Also, I think Bobo Brazil predated him, but maybe the number two black star in the Northeast
for
a little while. And he had some really good houses against Buddy Rogers, which I think sort of people forget and they need to take into account when looking at him.
Those would be two of my three picks. The third, I would pick Hurricane Ramirez over Hermanos Dinamita. The thing with them is they're great and all. Don't get me wrong. I actually think Cien Caras has a better case on his own than the brothers. But it's not a bad pick by any stretch of the imagination. Really, everybody besides Santo and Octagon has a really strong case.
Yeah.
Maybe La Parca as well.
I was going to say that. Yeah. And isn't there some debate about what exactly Ramirez did?
I mean, he was a big movie star in his era,
right.
Noted by many luchadors back then as a great worker. Obviously, we don't have the tape to verify that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, he was one of the top guys, in terms of his look. His mask was so intricate for the times. Invented the Hurricane Rana. How much more influential can you be than that overall? I think he's a definite Hall of Famer. I would definitely take a strong look at Sangre Chicana as well.
I mean, some great matches.
Yeah, we know that he was a great worker.
I just don't know the overall career enough.
Yeah. The thing is, the Mexican scene is even for Japan, there's a ton of great matches from the 80s that we could go back and look at even now. With Lucha Libre, there's not a lot there. But what we do have, he's at the forefront of some of the top matches of Lucha Libre at the time overall. But those are good picks. Like I said, I would definitely vote for Panther and Dixon. And the third one, any of the candidates outside of two, I would say are very good picks overall. Mm-hmm. So good job there overall. Nothing wrong with your potential ballot, even though you said you won't vote for him. The other region, we have a lot of different candidates here. Let's start off with the Royal Brothers. Burt Royal and Vic Faulkner.
That's definitely people that I probably know the least about of anyone, even in this category. And just, I don't know. I think they had some good drawing records in the UK, but that's about all I know.
There was a time period where Dave really liked them. And talked them up for a long time. I don't know if he still votes for them or thinks they're a great pick. But he was really high on them for a while. I don't think they would be in my vote category. But the thing is, with this region, you're looking at UK, Spain, Australia, Scotland. It's all over the place. It's really tough to get everybody a fair shot with this. Greece, in some case. So that's a really hard part of this region overall. I wish that he would change it, to be honest. But we'll see how he goes this year with the new rules, if that helps any. Speaking of Austria, what about Otto Wanz?
Oh, I think Otto Wanz is a no-brainer.
No-brainer vote from Gerard here for Otto Wanz.
He was just the longevity of the CWA and some of those houses he drew just should be enough to get him in there.
He's the one you have to look at for who we're going to talk about next to compare him to. He had positive influence for 20 years on the promotion.
And, not a great worker, although I love his matches against Vader.
Oh, yeah, Vader. Vader was so damn good back then, man. wasn't a great worker.
I just think his longevity, and he was drawing, 10, 15,000 people at times. So I just think it's there as a promoter for sure.
What about the controversial candidate, Big Daddy?
So,
who I think if you compare them, Otto is a better version of Big Daddy in a lot of ways.
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't even think Big Daddy was like, I mean, like Big Daddy wrestled, had some name, and then sort of in the late 70s, he became this bit of a bit of a cultural icon, but it didn't last that long. So I don't, so the people sort of, from what I understand, are sort of this idea that like, it's based on just how big of a star and like how much pop culture figure he is in the UK. But I don't think from a wrestling perspective, he was that big for very long.
Ethan laid his case against him out like perfectly almost. And by his case, I mean the case against him here. It just doesn't add up overall, but there's going to be some people that just will always live and die by him. Sometimes I wonder if some people just do it for like to troll everybody. Sometimes
maybe.
Yeah, but he is definitely, as the peak goes, he has a lot there. But it's such a short peak, and then there's so much negative that came along afterwards. And he's a terrible in-ring performer as well, overall. So there's a lot against him, I would say. Like I said, I would take Otto over him if you were to go here and there otherwise. What about Spyros Arion?
I mean, I think that I didn't vote for him, but I think there's something there. I mean, he drew internationally in Australia.
Yeah, tons in Greece as well.
Yeah, he drew in the WWWF.
One of Bruno's best opponents, actually.
Yeah. And also, you know, did a little bit in UK towards the end of his career. So, I mean, I think there's something there. I just didn't have him in the top of my thing this year, but I probably would at some point.
Ed didn't drop the All-Star title to Big Daddy because he didn't respect him as well when he was there. Yeah, great runs. Like, one of the best in Greece. Like, top five all-time star in that country. Australia, like, he was one of the biggest stars there as well, especially when TV hit. He had a big run there. And I've seen some of his work. The time was what it was, so it wasn't anything super special to me. But I think he was definitely good enough. And he was regarded well among the WWF workers. Especially, you got to remember at that time, too, WWF. The wrestlers there sucked, like for the most part, as well. So for him, even being average made him one of the best, pretty much. But I think he's a really good candidate, actually, if you look at it overall. What about Mike Marino?
From what it looks like, Mike Marino's like claim is mostly longevity, but it didn't seem like he was like some difference-making star in the UK necessarily, but not that he was unknown or anything, but it just didn't add up. I don't know. But there's definitely better British candidates, I think, if you look at him compared to some of his contemporaries.
That's a fair point, I would argue. It's just a case of, again, where are you going to go with all of these guys here in different cases? With Marino, I think that if you look at him, though, he did have a great run for a long time. You know, if you look at his run in England from like 1950-51 to all the way to the 70s, he did a good job and was always on top for them as well. I think when you look back, too, you have to do a little bit of trial and error sometimes, because we're not going to have direct numbers for a lot of this stuff from the 50s.
Well, also the way that Britain ran was they just ran a shit ton of shows.
Yeah.
And that's how they were trying to get the money, as opposed to getting like 10,000 people.
But he was like on top for a long time during like two decades worth. It's hard for me to believe they'll just keep him around for no reason if he wasn't doing good stuff. You know, he was like, when he died, he got a ton of, you know, coverage in the local, you know, TV and magazines when he died. He passed away with leukemia early on. And they specifically spotlighted him on the last episode of Wrestling on TV in 1998 in England. He's a guy that they looked at. So he definitely had a lot to him. But unfortunately, I wouldn't put him as a vote here, but I think he's worth looking at. overall, but I wouldn't vote for him either. But he does have good things to him overall. I just wanted to put that out there. Jose Torres, Spanish representative here.
One of the biggest draws of all time in Spain and France. I'm voting for him.
To me, he's like a no-brainer pick. You're not going to find anybody else there at his level for his region. He's just a and the thing is, again, it speaks to the great work of people like Ethan, but also Phil Lyons as well, that really unearthed a lot of these stats that we see about somebody who you never would have thought of from Spain. Here, it's really cool that we get to talk about somebody like that all these years later. I think that's awesome, personally. But he's like a no-brainer to be Hall of Famer.
Yeah, like his last listed match on Cage Match is in 1964. So
exactly, but still, he had so many crowds in five digits, like in Spain overall. Like Hall of Fame level for sure. Probably one of the biggest draws, if you count Spain and Europe, all in one, he'd have to be up there comparing him to the UK guys. He's a Hall of Famer. Like long story short of it. Jackie Paolo, he's on the cut list this year. Will he get there? What do you think?
I don't know if he'll get in. I'm not voting for him. He was a star for a little while there. So I think he has to sort of be looked at, but I don't think he's got as compelling as a case as some of the other Brits that we're going to get to.
Yeah. They talked about it. Ethan talked about the book he wrote, soured him on the old school workers or whatever at the time overall. But that to me is like a non-issue in my book. If he was bitter about stuff going on, going crazy, it doesn't really matter to me. He was a big time star, talking about his feud with Nick McManus. That's a guy you look at for over a decade on TV, really helped along the TV and the British scene overall. But that said, I think that he's a good candidate, somebody worth taking a look at. I could see myself voting for him overall, but I think there is four that I would vote for above him personally on that end. What about Dominic DiNucci?
I gave DiNucci a lot of look here. I sort of dropped. I came pretty close to voting for him. It's sort of impressive, especially in Australia and everything like that. So in that regards.
Which, for the record, I know everyone's probably like rolling their eyes at Australia. But back when he was around, they were like the most profitable country with wrestling.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then they had a lot of ethnic baby faces because there's a lot of Italians and Greeks there and everything like that.
Yeah, like so Arion we talked about.
Arion and yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he comes pretty close. I mean, I might have to think about him before, but he's on that line. And you can't dismiss him.
You could argue he's the top star in Australian history at the time. Yeah. I think that's worth something. But I wonder how much, because he was so instrumental in training Mick Foley, that will draw people to him in this ballot. Because we've seen weird ballots come along for seemingly minor reasons. I wonder if that will help him here. Billy Joyce here, another Brit.
I mean, I think he's someone that you really have to consider for everything. Like he was considered a great worker again.
Yeah.
Footage is an issue. He was part of the Snake Pit. There's some historical significance in there.
Yep, I was going to bring that up.
He was a star in the 50s and 60s. So, I mean, I think he's the number two Brit. But I didn't vote for him, but I will be in the future, probably.
Anybody who's influential on Billy Robinson and Carl Gotch, well, that's a Hall of Famer. In my book, that's all I need to know.
But he was also a top star, was a champion for a long time and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And that helped him be there. Like, arguably the best worker of his generation.
He was seen as one of the toughest guys there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, to me, it's not like a slam dunk case. But I think if you put him and Paolo against each other, I would probably go with Joyce.
I would probably go with Joyce as well.
Yeah. George Kidd.
Well, yeah, I'm voting for Kidd because he is
slam dunk, easily
British wrestling. Yeah. The style and everything like that.
I just wish we could, just as a fan, that's one of my golden like things that I wish we could see as like just a match of his, like a big time George Kidd match.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's no real footage of him.
Right.
But everybody says he's like one of the best workers like of that time period.
Well, and like Johnny Saint is just a George Kidd ripoff.
Yeah, yeah, Saint's a poor man's kid. Everybody knows that.
Well, let's go that to Johnny Saint then. It's been only on the ballot because of like Colt Cabana and Chris Hero.
And Quackenbush.
Yeah, and Quackenbush. I mean, it's fun to watch, but he's just wasn't as big a star as people might think, and he was like derivative of George Kidd. There's a decent amount of footage of him, and that's why he sort of gets this sized imagination of what people think of British wrestling.
Yeah, even among his era, there were people like Terry Rudge and Steve Gray I thought were better than him. Yeah. Rollerball, he got in last year, too.
Yeah, he did, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Rollerball Rocco, and I think he's way better than Johnny Saint, worker-wise.
Especially when you take into the Japan stuff into account.
Yeah.
As well. I think that was a good pick to have Mark Rocco in last year. We'll be interested if that affects Saint, because I think a lot of people that would vote for Rocco would also vote for Saint, but we'll see. Saint did have 46% on here.
He's getting a lot from wrestlers.
Yeah, and it clearly...
I suspect American wrestlers who watch World of Sport on YouTube, but...
Yeah. Well, George Kidd did get 51% as well, so he's up there. Saint is... There's no way you could say put Saint in when Kidd's not in. To me, it makes no sense.
And like people like Paulo were bigger stars.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I agree with that as well. A Killer Carl Cox.
So the funny story is that Ernie Ladd claims that Killer Carl Cox was not a racist, whereas Jim Cornette says, yeah, he was in and around the Klan. So I guess.
Oh, my God.
Who do you believe on that one? I don't.
Same thing with Murdoch earlier, that he's always been said to be a
guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that aside, there's a case for him. In terms of, he was a pretty major heel in Australia during the hot period, and he was also like a upper mid carder near the main events. Was teaming with like JYD during some of the hot periods in mid South in the early 80s. But I just don't think it's enough to make him a Hall of Famer.
I pretty much agree with you. I could be swayed towards him perhaps, but I don't think he's got it. Like right now.
No.
Regardless of personal life, who knows?
But he has a case, I think.
Yeah. I can't see him getting in, though, because just being rumored to be in that is going to be like a... Yeah. Oh, like, you know, you're screwed, even if it's not true. And, like, how would we know at this point? Overall. Kendo Nagasaki.
I mean... I don't know. I in some ways, I see the... sort of the case from both sides. Like, yeah, he was a pretty important TV star, but like, you know, British wrestling in some ways was starting to falter also when he hit his peak. So I don't know. I just don't, I mean, I guess why I get why he's memorable and everything like that, but I just don't, I don't know.
An influential gimmick, I guess.
But I just don't think it's there.
I agree. His aura, like the idea of that gimmick back then is kind of cool to me, but I don't know. I think maybe if I were around for that, I would have an emotional attachment to him in some sort. But when I look at his numbers and his work overall, I'm not buying it. Like at this case, we talked about Saint. What about Adrian Street?
Well, you know what? I voted for Adrian Street.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, I guess he'll probably get a death bump, but he got a lot of media coverage in the UK when he passed.
Yeah.
And when I was looking through his career, it was a long career. Like I don't know how long he was in the ring for. Let's see here. How long was his career? Oh, he had his last match in 2014 and his first match in 1957.
How about that?
Now, when you say longevity, obviously you're looking also in the case of, you know, top of the thing. And I get that the gimmick, I know that people like the gimmick's influential. It is. however you want to shake it. Yeah. I see it as more of a him preying off of the insecurities of his opponents and everything like that. You know, I mean, we just had that movie made about who's the Exotica in Mexico. They just had the movie made
Cassandro?
About Cassandro. Yes, Cassandro and everything like that. Right. I mean, that's a part of wrestling that you can't sort of run away with. And also, Adrian Street was a huge pioneer in the music crossover, and he was selling his merch in like the magazines in direct mail and everything like that. And I think that's at a time when that was something that still was being formed in wrestling, he was getting out there and doing the rock and wrestling connection and doing the merchandising and everything on his own. And I think that's really important.
That's true. I think he's another one where people's sensitivities are going to come into play on him. I wonder if that's going to hold him back any. But if you look at his career, it is, like you said, the gimmick, very influential. Like, no doubt about that. When you look at it, it'll be interesting to see how he does on this ballot overall. Really, this, like I said, this whole ballot is so out of whack to me with so many different people. Mm-hmm. I don't have a real feel for anybody, to be honest, on here, other than I think George Kidd like will get a lot of support on this because he has, you know, and like you said, Sane as well was a big part of it. Overall, who are your four here?
We got George Kidd, Adrian Street, Jose Torres, and Otto Vons.
Yes, Otto Vons. We have to enunciate that properly. Yeah, Kidd and Torres to me are like slam dunk candidates. They should both clearly be in. The rest, you all have an interesting like melting pot of different places and people. I would go with Joyce, and I think DiNucci would be my fourth overall. Mm-hmm. But I think Adrian Street's a good shout as well. No issues there. All of these guys are going to hover. I feel like I hope somebody breaks through so he can kind of clear out some people. You know, have one or two guys made get in, and then one or two guys drop off, and I think we'll be better off.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's going to happen with this new format.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think you're right about that.
And it's probably, it's time. Like, that logjam in Mexico lasted forever.
It did. It's not as bad now, though.
Oh.
Things are. And now you're getting to see some leeway and people jump in. Will this help it or hurt it? Overall, I think it'll help. Like everything you said earlier at the start, I totally agree. It's going to get people off the ballot faster and better overall. So I think it was a good decision overall. I still have my gripes with some things about this Hall of Fame, in all honesty. Not that I'm making it. I think overall, the Observer Hall of Fame is a very interesting time to look back at so many people we would never actually get the chance to talk about to any in-depth degree. And I think that's a very important part of it as well. There's some things I would change, but Meltzer, I'll give him this. He hasn't been afraid to make changes year by year. But
yeah, before, the tag teams and everything.
Yeah, for a long time, he was against that. He didn't want anybody to go in twice, but he finally turned it around. He added different things. He's trying to make it better. We'll see how it plays out overall. But before we get on out of here, I want to talk about next year. You mentioned it at the top. Who do you want to advocate for? Who do you think Dave needs to put on this ballot?
One of the names I said, and this is sort of on behalf of Case Lowe, who's also been lobbying for this person to come back on. So I asked for Gran Hamada.
And he's been on the ballot before. I couldn't believe he fell off.
There's enough footage out there now that I think we need to take a look about his influential case, and I think it's there. So I will probably be voting for Gran Hamada if he gets back. I asked for Yoshihiro Takayama.
I completely agree. I'm surprised.
Now, he dropped off in 2005, but he wrestled for 12 more years. And I know that on his audio that he did about the Hall of Fame, he threw out some names to his panel, and the first name he asked was about Takayama. And he got a good reception for that. So I think Takayama is going on. Now, I am not guaranteed to vote for Takayama, but I think he should be on that ballot.
He should be on the ballot for sure. and he should be looked at more in depth for his
that's
run.
That's the whole point of why I got him on.
Exactly.
He had that all of that career run after he fell off.
And was one of the top freelancers at his peak, like wrestling for multiple companies, winning all these world titles.
I mean, you could argue that he was the only star made in Japan.
Yeah.
that era.
And even then, that was because of an MMA fight, but still.
Yeah. But like Tenzan sort of flopped and then sort of got downcycled really quickly.
Yeah.
And then Akiyama never lived up to his potential.
True.
Kojima, kind of, but he didn't. But he didn't have the same peaks as Takayama did.
Yeah, the company went down.
Home events and everything.
True.
So I really think that we should be studying Takayama.
Okay.
And finally, because it will be the 50th anniversary of his debut as a referee, I asked for Kohei Wada.
If Higuchi's on, I think we have to give Wada the same.
So here's my point on Wada. He's still a referee.
True.
50 years. He was also an assistant to Baba. And I think that counts for something. And also, he is hugely respected in the business. Did you ever see that match in DDT? I can't remember everyone in it, but it was a five-way for the KOD title. I want to say it was like sometime in the mid-2000s. And like Dick Togo was in the match. I think Takagi was in the match. And they did a thing with the heel ref. And then like, I think it's like I can't remember. I could be totally wrong with this, but I know the angle. And it's during the match. And then like, I think it's Hiroshima goes to the back and he pulls out Kohei Wada. And then the crowd goes insane. Because it's Wada coming to like enforce, you know, the rules and everything like that, right? But to me, that's a sign of like his iconic nature, right?
Yeah,
and
I love Wada.
And when he left All Japan after the Nobukazu Hirai incident, was in demand as a Joshi ref. I mean, he was the ref in that Akiyasukawa and Yoshiko match.
Yeah, the Ghastly match.
Yeah. And like he was the match in, remember the Minoru Suzuki 30th anniversary match in the rain?
Yeah, with Okada.
Who was the ref?
It was Wada.
But which is to me was like that. These are all signs to me that like he is so respected in the business, and that's why he gets these spots. They use him in angles. You know, he's asked for these special shows to be the referee in these shows. So I think he's like incredibly well respected, and he has the longevity of being a referee for 50 years. That's my case.
I think all of those candidates are good.
Yeah. I have another candidate that I haven't asked Dave for, but I think I might just wait till the year after.
Okay.
You want to hear it?
We all want to hear it, Gerard.
Motoko Baba.
Now, that would be such an interesting person to put on the ballot.
I mean, there's something there because she was running that company with Baba. And even after the split, All Japan's business did not tank. Like, they were still doing decent houses. Now, she was out within 2 years. But you know, she kept it alive when that company could have just fallen off a cliff. Right. So I think there's something there. I really do.
No, I do too. If you want a good look at Mrs. Baba and her stuff in All Japan, check out the works of my friend Dr. Jonathan Foy and his books. Yeah,
definitely. I've read the book.
Yeah.
That's what shaped some of my thinking.
Yeah, that there's a lot there that will definitely be worth being studied if Motoko Baba gets on the ballot, for sure. But there's a lot to look into.
I have a question for you. Do you think Johnny Ace has a ballot and would vote for Motoko Baba if she was on it?
Oh, slam dunk vote for Mr. Ace, Mr. Laurinaitis, if he were there. No doubt in my mind. Does he have one? I don't know. Did Dave ever like the Dynamic Dudes?
I don't know.
Was he a big get fan global energy team? I don't know.
Johnny used to be in a 5-star match.
And he deserved it in All Japan. Hey, listen, global energy team was awesome. Okay. I will give them that. Mostly because of Kobashi. But the Patriot as well. I put it out a couple of weeks ago when we were first talking about doing the show. And I was looking at the ballots for just purely Japanese people. that were in the Hall of Fame and who might be a good person to look at or good people to look at. But I got some candidates here. The people who were suggested to me, the first one was Jumbo Miyamoto. We had a little heated interaction over that.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, she was like the predecessor to Mark Fumiaki, pretty much. Had a ton of titles at the time, was like the world champion a bunch of times and all of that. She's worth looking at for sure. All these people, I think, absolutely.
I agree with Jumbo Miyamoto.
Jumping Bob Angels as a team.
That's all influence, though. Like, how big of a drop were they in Japan?
You know, the thing with them is when you actually look at them, because like I said, everybody knows them because of the WWF stuff, right? But yeah, if you really look at them in Zenjo, Yamazaki did more than Tateno, like for them overall. And they were both around. Yamazaki was like a short period overall. Tateno wrestled for longer because she came back. But as a team, they weren't actually together that long.
Yeah.
Overall, like you could always look at their title history. They were like the tag champions once in Zenjo, and it was for like 2 months or something. You know, it's not like they were top draws or anything there. But I mean, they were great wrestlers, though. Like, if you talk about them on work rate level, I would put them up there with a lot of teams that are already in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And very influential, as you said. Although, the thing is, like, where does influence start? Because, you know, you could say Yokota was more so, right. Like, yeah, Jaguar transitioned them to, yeah, you know. But I think they're worth a look, at least, to dive in. Takayama got suggested to me. He's a top candidate to go in. Tenzan and Kojima, we talked about them as single stars. What about this one? I really like this answer. Putting Tawei back on as a singles on the ballot.
I don't think I don't know if Dave will do that.
I don't think he will, but I think it would be funny, to be honest with you. He was so close. It should have been in, but
I don't think people are going to vote for him, though.
I think so, too. I think, like, we slammed the door on him now that he got in as part of the tag team. If mm-hmm. he was still around as a singles, I think he would get there. But nevertheless, what about Masato Tanaka? He's got longevity.
He's got longevity, and I still think he performs at a high level. But I don't know.
I feel like I mean, Hall of Very Good, not Hall of
for yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. Masato Tanaka has a very special place in my heart because I saw him in ECW on TV in 1999, and he was another big factor in me getting into Japanese wrestling. But I don't think I could vote for him.
I agree. What about Sugera getting back on the ballot, which was also
I don't know.
He didn't get any votes the last time is the problem.
I don't think he'll get more votes this time.
That's what I'm saying. He hasn't added on to differentiate himself before. What about Naoki Sano? Great rivalry with Liger really jump-started him as the heel to him.
Yes.
Really became more of a shoot-style type of guy.
Yeah, but there was nothing else other than that Liger feud that was above mid-card. I mean, a great, you know, and I liked his team with Takayama. But I just don't think there's not enough there.
Had a run in Noah where he did, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. To be honest, I know apparently he was not that great, but he's an interesting one to look at least for his peak, but he would be on the low end of these names, in my opinion. Michiaki Yoshimura. Now, he's a guy, he was like the top tag specialist of JWA. Yeah. He had tag team titles with like Inoki, Toi Nobori, and all these guys. Like, he had like 12 runs, and he was very special as a booker. Ken Stalker suggested him, and I think it's a good pick. If Ken Stalker suggested it, then I definitely think he belongs for JWA, first of all. But I looked at him a little bit. I don't know how much support he would get because we're talking about a guy from the 60s.
Yeah.
But I think he's a good pick. Kiyoshi Tamura, one of the best wrestlers of all time.
Was he not on the ballot?
He was, along with Volkan. They were both on the ballot. Neither of them made it.
I mean, I think you can make a work case for Tamura.
Yeah.
A bit of a drawing case, sort of. But it wasn't really that long.
That's true. I mean, he was really, you're looking at a 3-year run at most. Like, that's even stretching it, like 3 to 4 years at most as a main eventer.
But I mean, I think his work and sort of the influence from that work is absolutely under consideration.
Even after Rings, when, you know, U-Style and all of that was more of an indie promotion.
Yeah.
He was a great, great freaking worker. Like, one of the best in the whole world. He's had, you know, look, he was.
Yeah. If Ledet UWF sells at Sumo Hall, get back to me.
Well, that's never going to happen. Overall, so.
Well, I would add that to his case if that somehow did.
I think, you know, he's had my match of the year 2 times in the 90s overall. He was kind of like the best worker of the back end of the 90s, in my opinion, in the whole world. I think if he goes on the ballot, I would advocate for him and vote for him like 1,000,000%. But he just didn't get the votes last time. So I think it's tough re-adding people who are on already.
Yes.
And I would prioritize Takayama as much. I think Tamura is literally a top 10 worker of all time in the history of the world. But I still would prioritize Takayama and maybe even the Jumping Bomb Angels over her. I personally also nominated Mak Fumiaki, who she was kind of on the ballot like year. But I think if you're going to put them in, I think she deserves a look. She was the predecessor to them at the end. Like, you don't get them without her. So I think that, you know, especially
she's a celebrity too. So
yeah, absolutely. And again, her run was very short. Like, she was much more of an actress than a wrestler, but I don't think you could appropriately tell the history of Joshi without her. More so than someone like a Jumbo, who had a lot of titles, but things changed when Fumiaki came around.
Right.
So I would not, like, that would be who I personally recommend, and also Toya Nobori as well. Another one, the same problem with Yoshimura, except he was actually the main eventer of JWA at the time. I think he runs into some similar problems, but I think with his historical significance, he's worth taking a look at as the top star after, you know, everything happened with Ricky Dozan and Baba and Inoki weren't ready yet. He was the guy that kind of followed that path afterwards.
I mean, I would probably vote for him, actually.
I think he's worth a look. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think if you put him on this ballot that we have now in Japan, I think he matches up pretty interestingly, just in such a different way where it's hard to tell. Fumiaki the same way. Her peak is up there. Longevity isn't. Where will they go? I don't know. But if everything goes good with Beauty Pair, they have a huge reaction. They get in with like 80-90% of the votes. Definitely think Bach deserves a look. So those were the two I nominated, and I got some good nominations. And Takayama, I think we all agree, is a great vote there. So thank you for this, Gerard. It was a ton of fun.
I always love coming on and talking about history.
I know, man. You're awesome talking about it. I really loved it. I love that you came on with me. I was really thankful that you spent so much time with me. We were able to push it back a little bit, but I think we got more time out of it than we would have had earlier. So
yes, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. If it, you know, as always, you're the guest. If you have anything you want to say to the people out there, the spotlight's yours. You want to hype anything, advertise anything, say whatever you want. It's fine.
Listen to the Emerald Flow Show. We are on all the major podcasts, apps and everything. I don't write as much as I used to on voicesofwrestling.com, but I did write the Fujiwara thing, and I wrote a small little piece about the Beauty Pair as well. But that was really short, but just being like, they're slam dunk case, this is why you should vote for them type thing. I may write something coming up about an All Japan year in review, because there's a lot to talk about in All Japan right now, and you should be watching it if you're not.
You spent all your writing energy into being a hater of Fujiwara this year.
I did.
You should do like I do. Make up stuff that you wrote as well. Just give yourself credit for stuff you never actually wrote. It's fine. That's the wrestling way, Gerard. But Flow Show is great. I always love the work Gerard does on there. Paul Vosch is on there as well. Another German we've got here, the German North American connection. We got just like me and Striga.
They love their wrestling.
Absolutely great history in Germany and all of Europe, really. On there, that's that's one of the things I love about wrestling. I always say it is how it's like a global language almost. There were weird two guys from North America that are hosting stuff with people across the whole ocean talking about this, talking about wrestling from Japan on top of it. Although sometimes you'll mention different stuff like as well if something important happens elsewhere. But mainly Noah and All Japan is your forte overall. And I appreciate that. I'm a listener every episode.
We'll probably cover Ultimate Party on the next episode, I think.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
I'm going to watch it tonight.
That's true. That's coming up as we're recording as well. So it should be a lot of fun. I look forward to Brooks and Ueno in the main event. Should be a great match. Saki Akai's retirement angle. You get Jericho, your boy, your Canadian.
Yeah, Jericho versus Takeshita. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got some DDT stuff. He's totally right about All Japan. Me and Stricker talked about it in the last episode. But they're doing some great things. On the Patreon, I'm going to cover all the tag leagues, by the way. Real World Tag Leagues coming up.
Starts tonight.
That's right.
I'm going to watch it live because it's like starts at 9:30 on my time.
Yeah, I should have a review of that tomorrow, maybe Monday at the latest, overall for night one. So check that out. Sign up to the Patreon. $5 gets you all of the Real World Tag League. I don't want to do it, but I will cover the New Japan Tag League as well, just for the listeners. We will see what happens. I'll at least get some good Bishamon matches somewhere along the line. Stardom tournaments. I wanted to cover Stardom's Tag League, but it was such a mess that it just never worked out. So many people got hurt and injured, and insanity occurred. We'll see who makes the finals. But when Gold Rush happens, I'll cover that on the Patreon as well. I don't think we'll get a chance to talk about it on the free show, but it'll definitely be on the Patreon at least. But most importantly, check out all of Gerard's great work. He's doing some great stuff. Really proud of him and Flow Show for doing some great things and representing the community. You know, like I said just last week, we got lumped in together. Like a lot of people mentioned us as like the top Japanese wrestling podcast and stuff. I was happy with that. Great company, along with Kickout as well. So a lot of fun going on in the whole world of Japanese wrestling and in the world of Japanese wrestling podcasts for English language speakers, which is an interesting topic to talk about. But hopefully you guys can follow us on Twitter at Eastern Lariat and do what Gerard did and follow the Instagram page as well at Eastern Lariat. I saw you following Gerard. Don't think I didn't.
I forgot you had an Instagram until you mentioned it on the last episode.
Well, in fact, we just got it when I mentioned it on the last episode. I mean, so the Instagram, it's not like the Twitter. The Twitter, you get news and all that stuff, and we hype up on there.
Get some history, I see.
Yeah, like the whole Instagram is like, what happened on this day in history in Japanese wrestling? Like, let me see here. What kind of topics do we have? We only have a few posts. I just started a couple of weeks ago. Let's see what we have here. We have a very funny picture of Toru Yano as an MMA fighter when he tried to go into Pride in 2003. Very amusing. Legendary Kobashi Misawa match. Terry Funk's last match in All Japan, Young Bucks winning the tag league, Takaiwa winning the Dragon Balls using his wish to get a world title shot against Nagata. That was 2008. Hokuto and Kazuma as well on there. So yeah. Oh, we also put up the weekly pro wrestling covers every week too. I talk about that. So if you don't know where to find them, just go to the Instagram. We'll talk about that, and you get a history lesson every single day. What happened? It could be a year ago. It could be 5 years ago. It could be 50 years ago. Whatever I find out, I look up stuff that happened on the day and post some pictures, have some fun with it. You know, you might learn something on there. Hopefully have some fun. We appreciate it as well. So thank you, Gerard, first of all, for following it. And thank you, everybody else for following along with the Instagram and the Twitter as well. We got a lot more followers on Twitter, or X, I guess you could call it now. Subscribe to the YouTube, listen to the show on Cage Match, all the good stuff there. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. Hopefully you guys enjoy today's show. And we will be back. Me and Strigo should be back very soon in a couple of weeks. We have to have stuff to talk about because I don't know if he's going to watch the New Japan Tag League, unfortunately.
Well, but not a lot of people are, but...
only one person.
Those that do are very valuable for audio content, I suppose.
Put that on my headstone, okay? After I pass away, reviewed New Japan Tag League there. That's what I really brought to this scene, you know, because whenever anybody says stuff like that, like, oh, you like when they talk about us, they were like, oh, they meant so much to me. I always think, man, I suck. Like, why do you want to like my stuff? That's what I really brought to the table most was New Japan Tag League coverage overall. But you will get that, and we will see what me and Striga do. In year-end award stuff, we're already talking about that too. That's going to happen at the end of the year.
You know, I was just thinking about the Eastern Lariat year-end awards because I know there I can vote for people that I wouldn't necessarily do the same in the Observer, and you know, I'm excited.
We do different awards than the Observer. They have theirs. We have ours. We named our awards now.
I could feel more comfortable voting for Yuma Aoyagi as like the Eastern Lariat MVP than like the MVP of all of wrestling.
Who would you vote for MVP of all of wrestling right now?
Probably Ospreay.
I think he'll win the Observer one, but he wouldn't really fit for a Japanese only candidate.
No, because a lot of his cases outside of Japan.
Yeah,
he's having like match of the years in France.
Something. That's true.
But I probably will be voting Yuma Aoyagi as MVP.
Well, remember who was the one pushing for that most on the last couple of episodes of Eastern Lariat as well.
And so I think I'll assume what best promotion will be from me.
That's right. I know exactly what you're talking about. 0-1. This is their year, Gerard's candidacy. We will see overall. But yeah, Yuma, definitely MVP candidate. I tried to push back on people say, you know, trying to give everyone else all the credit for stuff he was involved in. He deserves his roses, too. And he's awesome. So everybody check that out. We'll talk more about the end of the year awards as we get closer to the actual end of the year. But hopefully everybody has a good time. I don't know if we'll have a free show before Thanksgiving in America. The U.S., obviously Canada had its Thanksgiving and nobody else has it, I don't think, because that wouldn't make sense, to be honest. But still. If you do celebrate, have a happy Thanksgiving. If you're in America, have happy holidays, whatever you celebrate in November. Hopefully you got good weather coming forward. Good things. You got Black Friday coming up. Get some sales, get some good deals on stuff. I'm a big fan of that. Buy stuff for yourself and your loved ones, but especially yourself out there. Thank you guys for listening so much. And until next time, sayonara.
When you feel blocked, I feel funny.